Piece of paper.
Oh, you want me to read it?
No, we can play, let's see if I can do it. Higher level of Nirvana.
Nerdvana.
Nerdvana. See, I'm not going to do it. Go ahead, play. Hi, this is Neil Adams, and you're on. See, I didn't do it.
And you reached a higher level
okay.
of Nirvana.
This is Neil Adams, and you've reached a higher level of Nerdvana.
These are.
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
Well, no, a mage can kill a werewolf very, very easy. It depends on what...
Book. By the way, welcome back to the show!
In the werewolf book, the mage is going down, like...
Well, see, the that's thing only if the... That's, well, the thing is, you have to understand, that's playing specifically by the rules set specified in the werewolf book. It was actually the World of Darkness setting, which actually had a homogenized setting to play the different character types in. In that setting, everybody had a valid chance to wipe the other person out. It basically, when it came to a vampire or a werewolf versus a mage, it depended on who got the first shot.
If you look at the system now...
Well, I'm welcome to the show, faithful listeners. If you haven't noticed, we're sort of in the middle of a discussion. We've gone off on a bit of a tangent, and I decided to just go ahead and start recording. We're talking about the original World of Darkness.
Do you remember your little Egyptian mage that melted the...
No, it was Rip the Man Body.
Well, she had the little Egyptian kid.
I know, that's what she used. She used Rip the Man Body.
Yeah.
She was like...
Just like melted
from what,
the inside
from my
of the
experience was the... There was no scaling. I mean, with vampires, the older you got, the nastier you got.
Yeah.
Then it flipped for werewolves. It was, you started off as a badass, and then you got a little bit more badass, then you got old and died. Or you were killed.
Mages?
You died.
You didn't get old in that game.
Mages, they get more powerful, and then they just leave the planet. They're like, fuck this reality. I'm out.
We also
hunters were always killed because they were worthless.
Well, if you mix mind with temporal,
nobody wanted to play Wraith or Changeling.
My brother played a mind guy. He was a kung fu mind temporal mage, and after a while, no one knew he existed.
The Akashic Brotherhood, isn't it?
Yeah, basically, he would just walk in. He would do what he wanted. And no one knew what happened. They'd be like, what just happened? And they'd be like, I don't know. Somebody just kicked our ass. Who was it? I don't know. It was that guy over there. And he'd just walk off. After a while, he's just like, I unwrapped your soul.
Yeah.
They're like, what the hell?
Honestly, I liked how magic worked in Mage. If you got it. And it was that...
Well, if you play it right.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about
any game can be played right.
And I'm not saying, like, paradox it so everything
makes...
Well, same with werewolves. Werewolf should be...
let me pose a question. Have you ever seen a system that, to you, it was worth playing strictly by the rules and not house ruling a damn thing?
No.
It depends on what you're talking about, house ruling. House ruling away the lore in the sense that it was actually...
Yeah.
Actually, mythology.
And that was the epiphany that you basically shared with me. It was like, I like this, but the setting is so hopeless. And you're like, just turn it into mythology. And I'm like, I am an idiot.
Yeah, that was my house rule. Turn it all into mythology. Yeah, the vampires think back on Cain. Cain's going to show up. He's going to murder everybody. But do they know if that's true or not? Yeah, there's some old vampires who know, but they haven't woke up. Who cares?
You know, Jeremy, I want to see one of the vampires out with a little poster board. Cain is dying! Cain is
dying!
And the werewolf drives by. The werewolf runs by, picks him up, and slaughters him.
Because
that's what werewolves did.
Yeah.
Werewolves, vampires,
it was stupid.
It was on a scale. If it was an old vampire, the werewolf was screwed. But right. If it was a young vampire, that vampire was just slag.
You have a
first level werewolf and a first level vampire versus each other. The vampire is dead.
But also, if you're playing just
because it's like I spend a rage point. Okay, that vampire just
we once had a game.
There's a puddle where he used to be.
We once had a game where
in terms of actually encountering a system where I just played it for the system. Oh God!
And that's the only one.
That I have ever done that with actually is Needs and Masterminds. Reason being, the system is so open and allows you to do so much that you don't have to house rolling.
But that's exactly my question. So the answer for you is Mutants and Masterminds.
Yes.
You have not found a reason to really house rule anything in Mutants and Masterminds.
Because you can do whatever the hell you feel like. This guy blows up a quarter mile of the city. It cost him 13 points.
Fair enough. No, that's fair enough.
He teleports and explodes at the same time, which was awesome.
It's just
totally want to steal that.
Feel free to.
I'm actually going to be producing those.
It's just a question of like, okay, when I first started D&D at 12 years old, we were playing second edition. We house ruled the snot out of that game, which we didn't call house ruling then. It was just like, okay, we don't like this rule, let's change this a little bit. You know, THACO, that's an easier way to work.
It's when you first start out, you don't do so many house rules. Like when you first start gaming.
Well, I was hard.
It's a rule?
Yeah. So the Marvel Superheroes game, Marvel Superheroes role playing, I was very much by the rules, but then as you grew or as you became more efficient with rules, you're like,
that there are
like, well, this is a dumb rule, I'm going to ignore it.
But that's what's funny is that like when I first started gaming, I was gaming with older gamers, so they'd already gotten to that point. So we learned our THACO changing house rules, you don't necessarily need to do this to get a paladin thing, house rules, from our original GM. I mean, my first GM was a guy just by the name Bob. I don't remember his last name, I just remember Bob, big freaking nose, and great guy. Was great with kids. He ran a Saturday morning game with like 9 12-year-olds.
Oh,
totally and managed to wrangle us very well. And it's
like hurting cats.
But the thing is that he managed to keep us interested.
That's like
going.
Your brother's game.
Managed to keep us going, and he kept things like combat going and easy to understand for us. Which is why when I actually sat down and read the rule books, I was like, "This is nothing like Bob's game."
Wait a minute!
But I think a lot of that was because of the GM was able to explain it,
right?
And also, second edition did actually allow itself well for that because second edition, no game of second edition was ever exactly the same because it was both very well written and horribly broken.
At the same time.
But it was house ruled by.
Now, keep in mind, when I say second edition, I'm talking Black Book.
Doesn't matter.
I just want to be clear. It was the original copies of the books you reviewed last week. They're all broken.
I love second edition. I played second edition. I played original all through the. But second edition is my favorite. I would. Not quite worship second edition, but
that would be awkward.
It would be awkward, but it's broken.
We would have words.
awkward. So, every game of second edition is going to be a little bit different. I mean, it just is. It allows you to house rule even little things, but that's. I think it was kind of created after they let it go. They just let it do that.
Well, and that's the point where we can actually get into what we were going to talk about today. If I can do this anyway here, which is, you know...
Well, we're still doing the intro.
Okay, that's fine. I know, that's fine. Which is
because there are mysterious people that haven't been introduced.
Oh, there are mysterious people that haven't been introduced. Who are the mysterious people that have been introduced?
Well, you know, our regular...
I am the shadow that flaps in the night. Oh, wait, wrong.
Hey,
no, Darkwing. Darkwing.
Duck!
Let's get dangerous. Well, as you might hear, we are being joined by some guests, someone who has been long overdue to be welcomed to the show. It is our prolific actual play
I'm still reeling from when you actually listed off how many hours of my life I have spent doing this.
Yeah, and that's just in the last several years.
And that's just recorded.
Yes.
That's just my stuff there.
We are being joined, of course, by Andre, who brings us such great games as Brothers, as
Wizards College.
Wizards College.
City of Angels.
Yeah.
Bah, no, those are good games.
That's yeah, they're all song. Terrible. That's they're all song. Terrible.
No, I think that's,
and of course, Sarah is also joining us as well right now.
I'm just here for the fried chicken. You can ignore me.
She's here for the fried chicken. But might pipe in here and there.
This is the GM
gotcha. I would expect that she'll have something that she has to say.
But before we get too far beyond the already 9 minutes that we've gone, what have you been up to in the last 2 weeks? What have you been playing? What have you been running? What have you been doing?
I actually got to play my 2 Saturday games in a row!
I know.
In a row, even!
Yes.
I am at a player one.
I have a game contract, which looks like it's a player contract.
Yes.
Yeah, the first one says I as the player.
I have both.
And I as the player.
All I have is I as the player.
That's
fine.
I
as the GM.
No, I actually got to play in Wizards
Here,
College, and I got to play in
Justice City,
which was fantastic. We've uh-huh. also
you got to come back to the base to a naked man.
Man, was that an interesting session?
Uh-huh.
Is that a problem?
We had to have a discussion with someone.
Well, considering he was molesting Robin's sister.
Whoa. They had to give the talk, didn't they?
No, I was not the molester.
Cerberus had to give someone the talk.
Yes.
Very high.
After which, Antaeus now firmly believes that you are, one, the leader, two, the base is your property, and all the others work for you, and of course Robin's character is your woman.
Tell him that. It works better that way.
I could still hurl him into the sun, you know. I literally have the
power. I've already threatened
you
with that.
I throw 1,800 kilotons.
He's already been threatened with the moon, the sun, and possibly just orbiting around the Earth forever.
Here's how I got to the planet.
He's decided.
He's been dropped off in the park to go fight hydras. Well, they go deal with
it. Basically, he got teleported multiple times.
And I'll just say that won't backfire.
Yeah.
You know. All
right.
But yes, you got to wear. You got to play in the superhero game. You got to play in Wizards College finally.
Well, Wizards College had been almost a month, and had Justice City been probably close to 2.
Yeah. Yep. That's about right. Andre, what have you been up to in the last 2 weeks?
Actually, quite a bit. I've gotten Evil Teacher Productions designed and actually up and running. Now I just actually need to start putting out products.
When you start, let me know. We'll start throwing it out on the feeds.
I can also probably on Drive Through RPG and stuff.
Before what is
Evil Teacher Productions? Is kind of my little harebrained idea. I've always wanted to produce modules, characters, and all that sort of fun stuff, you know, more to help the community that I've grown and lived in for the past several years.
So all those people that have been saying, so can you share with us the Wizards College stuff?
Can you show us the Wizards College stuff, the City of Angels, the New Hope,
the Dragons,
Dragons.
You get that one a lot too.
Yes, that system is actually getting close to finally being revised to the point where it's actually playable.
I haven't been playing it, so obviously it works.
No, that one's been on hiatus for several years. In addition, I actually started up a new campaign, Heroes for Hire, which is the title and the contract you guys will have found in front of you guys. I have no idea when that will actually be published, because it's still in the test runs to see if I actually like the game. If it isn't, it will die a horrible death, such as the Sword and Soil game, which will never, ever, ever be posted, and possibly the new Rippers game, because the group has become so bitter, I'm not quite sure it's going to be that
I'm fun. Sorry. I tried.
You tried, but...
My work schedule just killed
me. But I have particular members of the group who will not be named, who have been causing problems. Hence my ideas for the game contracts.
All right. So, and we'll get into that more later. Nathan, what have you been up to?
Work.
Nathan has been working.
Yay!
He's excited.
Not only am I doing, like, you know, actually working a job, I've actually been doing a lot of stuff that, again, you know, because of NDAs, can't really talk about. You know, I can say, I am beta testing stuff.
What's your new fun thing that you got going? Or do you want to talk about that later?
The stripper pole?
No.
What fun? Oh.
Sweet. You put in a stripper pole?
Come on. No, no. I got my birthday present early. I got it last Thursday. Yes.
And it's the stripper pole.
Does it descend from the pole's not for me, but it is.
But it is
no.
For you.
Let's be honest. We all know it's really for you.
Well. No, no. I got my birthday present early, and what it was is I got an Ouya. And
you got an Uzi? Sweet. You had a submachine gun?
No, I got an Ouya, the little miniature Android games console.
Oh. I have no idea what that is.
It was a Kickstarter system.
Remember the Kickstarter-funded console? The little tiny thing that was run on the same platform as all your phones?
Vaguely, I don't pay attention to Kickstarter because it annoys me.
Yeah. Well, it was Kickstarted and backed by a bunch of people, and it's this little $100 console. It's basically like Android phone-type games and stuff like that. But the chipset and stuff's been highly vamped up, and so it runs much faster than how it does on the phones and on the tablets because it doesn't have to run on the battery and stuff like that. And it has all the games are basically free to play up to a point, so you can try anything that looks interesting and decide whether you like it or not. I'm having a fantastic time with it. I've blown through all the games that I had that I hadn't had. I got for free so far. So I've gotten to the point where I have to start buying content. And there's several games that are on the fast list to actually buy. And I found out what was going wrong when we were trying to actually connect with the jackpad.
We'll discuss that later. I think you told us that. I went over and had played on it a little bit. It's a nice little system. I will say that for a $100 system, I was looking it up just to see it. It's a $100 system. It comes with one controller. A second controller is $50.
Yes. which is fine when you consider that. We were at Nebraska Furniture Mart because we were replacing our mattress. It's now 8 years old, and we were going through the hardware stuff. And DualShock 3 controllers are $65.
I'm not arguing.
Xbox 360 controllers are $60.
It's a $60 controller on a system that costs
It's a $50 controller.
Okay, well,
do you want to know something scary? Do you know how much of the manufacturing cost of that $100 goes to the controller?
Probably most of it.
73%.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm sure that the
so yeah, they're on the $50 for a controller. They actually, if you go to the website, they've got all the monetization stuff up, so you see how much they make.
Oh yeah.
They're making like $2.18 on average on a $50 controller.
Oh,
because
sucks.
That's how much the retailer sells it for. That's not how much they get for it.
So what have you been up to, Jeremy?
That's fascinating. Yes, Jeremy.
So I got an Ouya, and I've been having great fun with it.
I played in the superhero game.
What's this about?
And I jumped into the Kickstarter for Weird Rome, which just came out. And they won't be shipping the books until December-ish. But they said the free PDFs will be coming out soon. So I was able to get in that. So I've been looking through my PDF. I've been playing some different games. Check out WazHack. WAZ Hack. It's a side scroller. Pretty fun. Work, obviously. Other than that, not much. Trying to get us on a playtest. That's about it so far.
All right, rocking. Other than obviously the superhero game, which I thought the last session went very well, the Wizard College, which also the last session went very well, had a lot of fun. That GM though is a complete tool. I can't think.
God.
We've had the occasional friend over. We played a few games, one of which I'll be talking about tonight later. But we had our CanCon postmortem, which went well. We played some stuff after that, including Flashpoint. I'll talk about at some point as well.
Red November,
which is what I'm talking about tonight, because played it again.
What
last
else
night.
Did we play?
Pandemic.
Pandemic lasted 10 minutes, I think.
It was like, okay, we're doing good. Outbreak. Wow, we're screwed. Literally, we died in very quickly.
And then nature takes over.
Nature destroyed everything. I don't remember what else you played. I thought it was
I think that was
but,
one. Maybe after I left, I don't know.
I don't remember. Anyway, beyond all that, though, working, doing my thing, beyond all that.
Do your thing.
I've been watching crappy movies. Really crappy movies.
Sharknado?
No.
Go
that
Shark.
Would be a
Mancino?
Better movie.
Paul wants
no,
to watch
that would be a better movie. I watched Queen
Shark.
Of the Barbarians.
Oh, God. Netflix. Yeah, that movie is awful. I watched it with Becca.
The,
oh, God.
The bad guy, when he was hiring guards, on their list of, on the resume, the first thing it said on the resume was rapist.
Yeah.
I know that's what it said. It did not say good at guarding.
Rapist.
Good at
just
fighting.
Rapist.
Just rapist. That whole town, of the women in that town
got
have to be horrified.
Like
because every time
the guards
our heroes, yeah, when they got attacked,
the guards
that's what
rapist.
The guards tried to do and did. And I was just like, but at least the barbarian queen, when she was potentially, was biting people. She was just like, yeah, touch me.
Or the
I was just
we,
like,
I don't know.
Still sounds
say.
Better than Red Sonja.
Actually, no. No.
I would disagree.
Because Red Sonja was terrible.
Red Sonja still has Arnold in it going, No, the whole Kegel scene made the Barbarian Queen movie terrible.
Whoa. Kegel agrees. Oh, the cat is still in your stomach.
And they're pushing the guy with her Kegels into the vat of acid.
Oh, no. That was awesome, though.
That was
murdered the guy.
Horrible. Whoa.
In, pushed him into acid, and I was like, yes.
With
that is
her
how
junk.
You die. You need to die now, and now you're dead. And I was like, yes.
Yeah. It's that bad.
So,
tried to watch them Yankees.
I tried to watch an alien movie, and it was so bad, I'm like, no. So I went over to another alien movie, and guess what?
It was worse.
No, it was the same movie with a different name, and they just cut out the narrator, and I was like,
Smurf.
Oh, Smurf you. But yeah, I've been watching bad movies. I watched... yeah, that's my goal. When I get home from work, right? Yeah.
Just watch bad movies.
Watch bad movies.
Actually, I started watching a movie the other day, which seems pretty good. I can't believe. I know it originally was supposed to come out in theaters, but Solomon Kane.
Oh, I watched Solomon Kane too.
It never made it. It made it to theaters in France.
Never made it over here. And that movie's several years old now.
And that's sad.
But it's actually,
I enjoyed it.
Where did
you find it?
It's on Netflix.
Netflix.
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
I've been wanting to
watch
see it for
Solomon
a while.
Kane.
It's
fun.
It's pretty interesting so far. What I've seen about 20
really
minutes of it.
Really pretty funny, actually. And I not funny like ha ha ha, but funny like he did that. That is great.
Oh, yeah.
Do that again.
He does. Over and over. Yeah,
and
first, the beginning of the movie,
Solomon Kane's one of those
killing people left and right. It's awesome.
I feel is like one of the more overlooked characters over the years. Who is just if you look into his mythology, you look into his stuff, is really badass and really cool.
Okay. Yeah. The Savage Worlds of Solomon Kane.
Which is right. Which is well, okay. But I've never actually had a chance to pick up and read that book yet, and because it's honestly that it's an expensive book. It's
well,
yeah,
I'm
it's
not going to ruin the ending. But the ending was cheesy and kind of crap. But the rest of the movie was good. And I liked the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I actually liked the character.
Like I said, what I saw, I liked.
I
liked
the sorcery.
I
the magic.
Well,
for the record,
it's mirror magic.
Do you know who wrote...
Yeah, it's Robert E. Howard, so the magic is messed up.
But it's mirror magic, and it was creepy as hell.
Yeah, I have, actually, in my room, I have the collected Solomon Kane. I have a book that is all the Solomon Kane stories, and they're really good.
The bad guys are horrible.
Puritanical demon killing. It's always fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
the other...
So, anyway, you had a segue you were working
on. I did. But my segue...
In the cloud.
I
he was in a space movie.
Oh.
I don't know if my segue can work.
Or Adrian
now,
Paul.
But we've been talking about role-playing systems. We were talking about role-playing systems. I posed the question of house ruling and things.
Nice.
And we're going into tonight's topic is 11 ways to be a better role player. And my segue was going to be, well, since we're talking about systems, do you feel that systems hindrance you in being a better role player? Or can they hindrance you in being a better role player? Or do you feel that more freeform systems work better for better role playing. I know Ethan hates more freeform systems with a fiery passion.
Minus feng shui.
Part of the reason why he dislikes a lot of the freeform thing is because it allows players to railroad the GM or steamroll the GM.
I'm not going to put words in your mouth.
And honestly, well, that's what I've heard you say before.
I don't care.
It takes power away from the GM to control the game. My major
problem with, and this obviously goes towards the Fate system, Tracy. My major problem with it is that it promotes player versus player.
Yeah, I saw you guys killing each other when you guys were playing.
Yeah, but that was a one shot.
It doesn't matter though. I don't like players killing other players.
Yeah, that was a one shot.
And yes, there's the inner player there's the player and player conflict. But when it comes down to basically, well, you're both all just trying to screw each other over. That's just not fun. And as a GM, I don't want to see that. So, yeah. There are some aspects of free play systems like that I don't have complete issue
but
with.
That's
but
that's only one element of it. That's the thing. And it's...
And
it,
I've got my... I've got my Savage Worlds.
And it can happen in any system. I mean, there can be... It can happen in a D&D where you suddenly just go, you know what? I'm going to kill that guy's character. And this is why I'm going to kill that guy's character. Mm-hmm. Because that guy's character is a horrible piece of crap. And then you do so. And then the two players...
Yes, but in that, you have... definitive unit of an armor class, you have dice that you roll to do it.
Well,
in Fate, you spend points to basically screw them over.
And you steal
their points to do it sometimes.
That is correct.
Well, right.
Which pretty much is like, okay, I'm going to fight you, so I'm going to take away your sword now.
Right.
Now I'm going to take away your armor, and now I'm going to stab you.
But...
And speaking from the point of view of the other player, well, that blows.
That does.
But especially since I don't have any points to counteract.
That is the rules itself, not just screwing over the other player. You can do that in any system.
Yes, so there are rules in place that help. That
ultimately,
that
it comes down to
counteract the whole idea of being able to
what kind of
a player before they have a chance to react.
One of the reasons why I do not necessarily like free-form role-playing games, and I'm a bit less discriminant than...
It's because you know your players.
I know my players. Well, in addition, here's the thing. They can get out of hand fast.
That's true.
And now, if you are trying to have some sort of set campaign idea, if you are trying to have some sort of plan for where you want this game to go, nothing can stop a group of free-form players. I've had instances of this where I was like, okay, I'd like them to slay this dragon. Well, apparently, because they are free-form players and they did the right point spending and all that sort of stuff, they managed to use the king as an inflatable balloon, fill him with acid, and then sprinkle his ashes all over the kingdom, poisoning the land, which then, in the long term, kills the dragon. Freeform gets a bit too wacky too quickly for any sort of long-term campaign.
But was that set up at the beginning?
The wackiness?
No. When you discussed it with your players... This is what I want to run. This is what I want to play.
Yes.
Well, then there's a communication problem.
It's not a communication problem. Trust me. You have to know the players. It's not a communication problem.
It is. There is a breakdown there.
No, his players are actually listening to everything it says and specifically doing anything to contribute.
And guess what you're saying right there? The word that's coming out, his players.
I'm not one of them.
I'm not saying you are. I'm not throwing that. What I'm saying is his players or the players. Yes, there are issues with systems getting out of hand. But a lot of this comes down to communication. And yes, they can get out of hand.
Who's going to go for it first?
I'm not.
In terms of communication, as a GM to player, you're always going to have some level of miscommunication. You said you're walking on the left side of the hall, therefore you trigger this trap. Well, I actually meant that I was sitting on the right side of the hall. You're going to have those miscommunications. However, the entire leveling system, the dice system, those put a bit more limiters. One of the other problems I have, moving on to the second point, as this is obviously a contentious point, is by balance. I have players like my fabulous William J. Carter III. Yay. He is, in fact, one of the most creative, upbeat guys you'll ever encounter. However, in a game where he is freeform, he is
a nightmare.
He's a nightmare. In addition, you also have to understand who else is in the group. I also have my wonderful fiance, who I'm very happy to be getting married to, Jessica, who, when she's in a group with Jay, and it's a freeform system where there's no balancing factors of levels, dice, modifiers, anything mm-hmm. like that, he steamrolls over her, and the system allows it. Now, is this a breakdown in communication?
I think
sure,
that's the key thing here, is the system allowing it. Is my big issue with something like Fate is it doesn't have any way for the GM to firmly say no.
Other than you slapping down a big, hard GM fiat.
Right.
And I never, ever like to use the weapon fiat.
And
I do.
You also... It is a piece of communication.
Whenever he's playing under me.
Because if individuals cannot police themselves...
Mm-hmm.
That, in itself, is a breakdown of the contract, without any physical contract, of the social thing that we've just built.
So, oh, great, we're getting into the social contract.
All right, let me get on John Locke. I got a book around here.
So it then comes down to...
Knowing your players.
Oh, right. Knowing your players and choosing your players and your...
And the system...
Very, right, and that's fine, and that will move us into, I guess, I'll call that.
Yes, that's our ham-fisted segue into talking about being better players. So we'll be back right after this.
In a world where it's only available for download on GamersHavenPodcast.com.
In the small village of Dundreville, three brothers are spurred into action when an ogre decides to raid the village, burn down the blacksmith shop, and claim two of the citizens. The Link brothers, rather than see their fair village taken advantage of, decided to head out to do some justice. However, upon returning triumphant, they find their village has been attacked and the majority of the folk has been kidnapped and possibly bound for slavery. The first step into the long, hard road that is adventuring is a dangerous one. But will the brothers become legends? Or wind up dead, unarmored, in a ditch. Pathfinder. Brothers.
Ew, here we are again, still squaring off in our general quarters. We are... This is sort of all... this whole discussion here today is being born from... an article that was posted from Look Robot called 11 Ways to Be a Better Role Player. The article was posted by Grant on there. I don't know the dude's last name. But he posted up on here basically information on 11 Ways to Be a Better Role Player. And sort of the bottom line, just to read the headings of these, is 1, do stuff. 2, realize that your character does not exist outside of the things you have said. 3, don't try to stop things. 4, take full control of your character. 5, don't harm other players. 6, know the system, don't be a dick about it. 7, give the game your attention. If you can't give it your full attention, step away from the table. 8, if you make someone uncomfortable, apologize and talk to them about it. 9, be a storyteller. 10, embrace failure. And 11, play the game. And so getting into that, we are going into, and actually this goes way, 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 way back to the lost episode of the Gamers Haven podcast, our very first episode we recorded ever that never saw the light of day, where we talked about kinds of role players. You guys remember that? That was 6.5 years ago.
Vaguely. I remember all of it.
You remember all
like
of
it was yesterday.
Okay.
I totally deleted it from my mind.
But we are being joined here by of course, Andre, who has recently found it necessary to make contracts with his players.
Yes. It had gotten to the point in my campaigns where, honestly, I'm not quite sure that they knew what the expectations of coming to game were. Mm-hmm. This includes them doing PvP, them threatening each other, them backstabbing each other, them... talking over each other, them causing awkward social interactions where I had to sit there and manage their social interactions. Players who'd sit there on their cell phones for 45 minutes and then glare at me when I tell them to put it away. That's right. They said, they're what? It's not my turn, so I can sit on my cell phone. People who, let's see, some of the other things. One of the other problems that I discovered was people sit there and go, well, it's in my backstory. Well, no one has read your backstory. Mm-hmm. I read your backstory, you read your backstory, none of the other five people at this table read your backstory.
Have you shared that information with everyone else?
Which, and especially if number 10 on my contract, which was embrace failure. Now, you were very blessed to have a group that you could horribly, horribly brutalize in your Deadlands setting. If I so much as even put charisma drain from a crit card on somebody, I'd get chewed out and smurfed up all night.
Well, just remember, I'm the sadistic GM here.
So I found it necessary to actually write contracts so they know what I'm expecting. Mm-hmm. And then because I don't want to be a hypocrite, I made my own GM contract based off a very similar article for, because there are numerous articles on
how to be a better GM,
but only one on how to be a better player.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's look at the number ones on here. I mean, number one in the articles, do stuff. And yours is obviously be an active player. That's very similar there. But
my contract is in a large way based off of that article because I really like that article.
It's a good article. It's very good. I'll try to put a link to it on the website and in the show notes. But, you know, I think we all reach a point with certain players, especially, and definitely our groups, where we have to sit down and go, okay, there seems to be some mix-up in communication here as to what is expected and what is not expected type of thing, and what should be common sense. So here, laying them out, I mean, you did a contract, there are these articles out there. What do you guys think... what do you guys think about number one? Do stuff, you know, be an active player.
I think that's not only just like an impetus of being a better player. That's an impetus of why are you going to come to game if you're not going to do stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that goes into, you know, give me your full attention type of thing if you're going to be here.
Very, very
true. Sorry, what? I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah
exactly.
No, but it goes into it. It goes into like, you know, and I'll admit I've been in games before that where sometimes it's a little difficult. Now this may be partly the GM thing of, and partly the fact that I've also stepped into a couple games that were already established, having moved different places. It can feel a little awkward trying to do things and impart my character or impart myself into the events that have gone on when I may not know the entire thing of what's going on or know the direction certain things are going, or even in one case that I had. Almost had the GM not really know how to include me in the things that were going on.
See, often there's a delicate balance, especially if you're first starting out with a system and starting out with a game, where, I mean, speaking from my experience, is if there's like a line where you have certain games, basically, where... Say you go, you're playing, you have two games going here. You have Savage Worlds and you have Cyberpunk. In Cyberpunk, you're much less likely to take risks because you're much more likely to die because the combat is so vicious. But in Savage Worlds, it lends itself much more. You can go over the top, but not feng shui crazy. But you can, you know, cut the rope, swing from the chandelier.
It is above Shadowrun, below feng shui.
Yes. Whereas feng shui is just balls to the wall crazy.
But unless you're doing a,
walking on bullets,
but unless you are actually playing a investigative game, we are not here to be lawyers and read paperwork. So when I look at do stuff, I'm going to do stuff because
as a player, in some things, I mean, there's that. Especially if you're attached to your character, it's well, I want to do stuff, but I don't want to die, I don't want to screw this up. Well, I don't want to.
I can provide
steal.
A concrete example of one of the campaigns that some of you may have listened to. New Hope. The campaign setting, since they're trapped inside a flying city. There's no escape. They're in a flying city, a mile above the ground. They were really afraid to be active players and do investigations, follow leads, that sort of stuff, get things going. Because since they're in that active city, adventurers like to light the tavern on fire and then leave town and never come back. In this town, they literally cannot leave. So they're afraid to do that because there are long-term repercussions. So I've included this in my contract to do stuff because
they need to do something.
You need to do something. And honestly,
Boring otherwise. You know, no, it's you not boring for something. It's boring for you as a GM. It's boring for the other players.
Look,
it's
you
like,
know what? You're going to get in trouble. You're for punching the king's royal captain
for running up and trying to take on the ogre but why did you show up if you're not going to do something?
I mean, who here remembers the Deadlands game where they just wanted to start a brothel?
Yeah,
that was kind of boring. I'm sorry.
I wasn't even in that game, and I know that game.
Boring. I wanted to shoot people.
Yes.
Not play, not characters, but players.
Yes.
As a part of do stuff, and maybe as a number 12 to the list, because I know this isn't on there. Would you guys consider the statement "Don't be afraid to lose a character"
that
as
is,
important?
There are times, yeah.
That would be honestly. I would go to number 10 on there, which is embrace failure. If
yeah.
your character dies a good death,
oh yeah.
To steal a line from Man of Steel, a good death is its own reward.
Yeah.
If you've ever had one of those characters that's like, oh, I accidentally did too much damage, you died, sorry, that kind of sucked for you, you're kind of like, that's lame.
Yeah.
However,
yeah.
if you take, you know, the arch artifact that is going to destroy the world,
mm-hmm.
and you say, you know,
yeah.
I'm going to kill myself in order to prevent this from happening.
Yeah.
That's a but, good death.
But
the,
even but even,
yeah.
but even what happened in The Last Wizard's College, I was being a little stupid that night. But I was fully convinced. We had just teleported into my homeland. There were big things going on. And I said, screw it. If I die, I die. And I, as the alchemist, I charged the ogre.
Also, some characters
and we
are,
saved your ass.
Yes, some characters are going to do
because
that
we are your
anyway,
friends.
Based on the character.
Not me.
And
I would have let him
if
die.
If you are playing the character, you need to play the character.
We've already
now,
killed
in the
you
back
once.
Of my mind,
yeah.
I'm not going to
once.
Try to screw over the party, but I know that we get to that part. But this still goes into doing stuff.
Oh, yeah.
If your character is going to jump into something,
mm-hmm.
you need to actually do it. And also, you need to just
yeah.
do something. I'm not, I don't show up to just
yeah.
be like...
Definitely number one and number 10 go hand in hand, really. I mean, it's like, if you do stuff, great, but if you fail, accept that.
That's
you know?
Where
oh,
I run into issues, because if I'm just sitting here and nothing's going on, guess
like,
what?
Or
I'm
it,
going
bumped,
to do stuff.
It bumped into this, I need to re-roll it. That drives
gonna,
me crazy.
If there is not
like,
something...
If that had been a 20, you would have been like, I got a 20!
I have a player who does that. I actually have several players. The further they sit away from me, the better they roll.
I roll extremely well when I sit right next to you.
And that's fine. That's
I don't roll any better when I sit away from you. How many critical failures did I roll the last time I was on the couch? 5? I failed. How bad did you fail?
Man.
I rolled a 1.
Some systems lend
twice
themselves a little bit better for doing stuff. But, I mean, you can do this in Sandbox. You can do this in a set campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't allow players to do
like,
stuff,
oh,
especially
like,
those
that.
Players that are going to get itchy and
your game.
Start to want to cause issues.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Excuse me about it. Usually, let's face it, the dice hate us.
And that also goes into...
It goes back and forth.
That also goes into number 2, then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your character does not exist mm-hmm. outside the things you have said. Unless you're doing things, your character is kind of just the cardboard stand-up.
Yeah, like I am when I'm not there.
This goes into one of the campaigns, as I said, that I wrote for Post, which was... I will talk and you kind of productive role play that you have a character history. I've had games where I required character histories. You know, this is something I see GMs doing a lot, so you think about the character, so you do all that.
Mm-hmm.
But they constantly reference back to remember in my character history, and everyone else is like.
But.
Yeah.
Now,
well, and you can't. And I'm sorry, we as GMs, we know our players. We know that if they. As GMs, we give them a 5 or 10 page handout. 90% of your players aren't going to read the damn thing.
Uh-huh.
Let alone if one of your players hands you a backstory and you say, well, I'll post this on the group, or here's copies to everyone. You know that none of the other players are going to read this.
But that also comes into why I really started to enjoy things like the character building system from Spirit of the Century, or even from Fate System, where, yeah, you're developing this backstory. It may not be a 30-page backstory. It doesn't need to be a 30-page backstory.
But it's inclusive.
But it's inclusive.
It's one of the reasons I've become very much a fan of the character creation session, is to sit down with everyone at the table and make the characters together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, you know, figure out your backstories and everything. Do this around the table. And that way everyone feels involved. Everyone feels like they're building something.
My thing with the backstory is, yeah, may not end up reading every single line, but... Every once in a while, I'll just kind of go like this, and then it's going to pop up. It may pop up at a random place. It may come back to screw somebody over. It may do whatever. But for a player to know another player's backstory, nah, unless they bring something up. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you're not doing something in the game, or like the chest that Tim had,
mm-hmm.
that was right in front of our faces. We didn't know what was in it.
That's hilarious.
A different backstory.
In the my brother's tallest game, where he was playing a wizard's apprentice, wizard came into town. His master was a complete jackass and gave him this trunk that weighed like 400 pounds, but he couldn't open it. And he said, "You have to take this with you wherever you go. You have to take this with you."
My special item when I reached level 5.
Uh-huh.
Even when I got the item that could open it, I refused to open it because I was afraid what was in it.
Yes.
I was pretty sure it was my master.
So we dragged that thing around. Our going idea was the master was such a jackass, he didn't want to pay the 2 coppers to get into the city. And so he put himself into the trunk to get past the gates.
We had an item that allowed us to open everything.
Uh-huh. And we didn't open it. We're like,
I still believe in my brain, he's sitting there just staring at it, thinking about dropping it somewhere. Possibly in lead.
Would be alright to have something in the trunk.
But yeah, something and then,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, when you guys are here, by all means, that
role play is its own payoff ultimately. You know, even if you write up a backstory as a player and certain elements of it or huge elements of it don't ever get used, as a GM, I know as a GM, I appreciate that it's there, even if I don't use it or even if you don't use it. I also know that as speaking as a term from a player, is a lot of times I'll come into a game with an idea of what my character is, and he goes into a different direction. And that's just an organic way to do the character. It's like, well, I was going to be like this, but he's sort of, within this group, he feels more like going this way, so that's the way I'm going to go. And then you change things.
For example, Hercule Gaston.
Yes.
I want to play a Frenchman.
Yes. No, yeah. I can't do a French accent, save my life, so he became British. Proper British. And I love Hercule. Hercule's a lot of fun to play.
And
I will say that Wizard's College is probably the most fun I've ever had in the game. I'm serious.
As Audrey, not this is as Audrey, that's a hard act to follow. Great.
As Andre said, no,
yes, Andre, we're setting you
Andre's,
up on this pedestal
it's not,
now.
It's
going,
not,
he is.
It's not just it's, no. It's not just the game, it, and nothing against Justice City, but it's just.
Oh yeah. I'm going to throw something at you.
Oh, sure you will. It's.
Give me all your character points.
For a long time, I have wanted to play in a solid, well-GM fantasy game.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time I've actually been able to do it. So it was just, yeah. And there's good roleplay, there's good combat when we do combat.
And, we went 3 sessions without a combat, I think. Something like that.
But you know, it's nothing wrong with
that. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. We've had Justice City games where we've had no combat in it. For a superhero game, for crying out loud.
But what's funny about that is, and you're going to laugh, I used to talk to all the old role players in New Jersey, like, oh yeah, they've been doing this since the 70s. And somebody once told me, they're like, oh yeah, we haven't had a combat in like 4 years. I'm just like...
Well, old school, you didn't want to get in combat.
Because
well.
You would
die. Keep your resources.
But
we all know what mages did in first edition. You memorized fly, invisibility, and let's see, speed. So you. Oh, combat's here! Poof!
Yeah, pretty much.
Well,
magic missile.
But I also understand. But his comment was, we haven't done combat in a number of years, we have too much fun doing role playing stuff.
Yeah.
And at the time, when I was being younger, I was like, the hell is wrong?
Not saying that player versus player stuff can't be fruitful. In my first D&D campaign, there was I remember a session where I had 3 players at the time, and it all took place at their campsite where they basically, the 3 of them, stood around and argued with each other over this course of action that was ahead of them, and they were all doing it in character, they were all doing it as part of the story. None of them came to blows. Well, the paladin and the fighter did eventually come to blows. But it wasn't a, I'm pissed off at you, so I'm going to hit it. It's like, no, this just makes sense, it's going to happen. And then they came to terms with it, and it all worked organically within the story. It's like, that's great. You know, as nothing is better than as a GM if you can just sit back and watch. And let them do their thing and going, okay. But, you know,
it's speaking of letting them do their thing, that segues into number three, canceling out.
Don't try
and stop things, because that's one of the things that I see a lot in games.
Mm-hmm.
I punch this guy, I stop him. That's one of the things that always kind of got me, because you don't sit there, you don't have to do the Oblivion, Skyrim, Elder Scrolls. You see him draw his fist, the fighter just goes, wham! And it's like, so how do you know that's coming?
You pause it.
Yeah, you pause. I mean, it's just like, what?
No. Yeah.
Let something happen, and then you can actually build a lot more stuff out of it. That's
mm-hmm.
the better role play.
You can react.
What are the consequences? Yeah, be reactive rather than in proactive type of thing. It's like, okay, on that lens, there's different games. You know, I mean, in a fantasy game, you're much more prone to be proactive and
prone to be reactive. Because the Lich is like, what? Why are you?
Yeah.
In
a superhero game, you really have to change the way you make the game, because the superheroes 99% of the time are reacting to things. You have to basically go, here's the situation, and they go, oh, okay, I'll go deal with that. Because that's how comic books are.
The speedster might be able to be proactive.
No. They're just reacting
a
lot faster.
When you punch, they go, no.
No.
The time person is like, I'm just gonna.
I'll be back.
Still technically reacting though.
True, reacting. They're just fixing everything.
But that's still a reaction. Yeah. It may be a retroactive.
That's a great point. Let the fighter punch the guy, then apologize.
Deal with that interaction.
Exactly.
There, you know, it's like if El Ravager will not bow to any man, instead of trying to basically fix that situation, let it happen and then see. Go with what happens after that.
The king goes, excuse me? Do you know who the smurf I am?
Yeah. What the heck, man?
Not to mention, you might win the fight and then you have more loot.
There is that. And that obviously depends on the game you're playing.
Hey, no, experience is called experience for a reason.
There's
true. Always the guy's boots. You can always take
there,
his
boots. There are the smoking boots, yes, that are somewhere.
Especially in Paraguay.
In my fantasy world, there is a pair of ever-smoking boots.
When the world ends, there will still be the ever-smoking boots.
But yes, the you know, it's rather than stop an action, you know, come in and let that action happen and then react to it, you know. And mm-hmm. It's a good way to go.
Also, according to this picture, have a dog covered in armor and have large ears.
Hell yeah.
That too.
I'm sorry.
Halfling?
Armored Diego.
It's a little bit bigger than Diego.
I still want to get one of those Russian bear dogs and just put armor on it. Yeah!
Those things are gigantic.
I still contend that it would accidentally eat our children.
Not accidentally.
No.
You would walk in and there'd be blood and it would just go. Yes, see,
I
wasn't even hungry.
Yeah, I got really stressed out because you guys left early.
You locked
so
me
I
through.
Ate the refrigerator.
You chained me
empty
up.
Of the kids.
And I murdered the block. Now pet me.
Or I will eat you.
Quicker and bring me treats.
Man. So I mean that. So number four here is take full control of your character. Or yours is participate. You know.
I would like to read the first line off of
sure.
The which is my character wouldn't do that is a boring excuse of massive no to the game story on a fundamental level. It's a point blank refusal to participate.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not. There are just times where it's like I'm sorry. My character wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. What other options do we have available?
Okay. Now, that last part is the important clarification.
And this works both ways.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, my character wouldn't do that, or it's what my character would do.
I've had so many PvP situations that started with, that's what my character would do.
Right.
In such a jackass or Jack Smurfery.
No, jackass.
Jackass.
Well, and it's such a backhanded... it's such a backhanded just slapping down of any kind of like, well, I wash my hands of any responsibility because it's just what my character
would do. I have a two-part response to this one, one of which is an actual in-game instance of this. This was actually in my first incarnation of the Rippers, which died a horrible, fiery death. One of the things that I have often looked at in stories, looked at in books, and even in games, you have this concept of the reluctant hero.
Mm-hmm.
The person who obviously is going, this is not my element, I don't want to be doing this,
right.
Why the heck am I here? And I would prefer that a lot more because it causes in-game drama.
Mm-hmm.
It causes in-game the character to...
Yeah.
Because
but
what he's not doing or is complaining about...
The problem I see with that, though, is you have reluctant hero. Hero is still a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And two, if you have five reluctant heroes sitting around the table...
It's hysterical.
Well, yeah, but not everybody's reluctant.
And there is a point. There is a breaking point. If I was like, okay, your five heroes are at the tavern, guards come in and start roughing some people up. Okay, nobody does anything. Okay, the guards start taking the women.
But that's when you go back to point number one.
Mm-hmm.
Do something.
Yeah,
I mean,
even if you're reluctant
hero, you don't want to get involved. You don't want to get involved. Mm-hmm. Okay, they're kidnapping people. I really don't want to get involved, but I'm going to hit them over the head with a bomb.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it.
Right.
But I have to.
And sort of my number, the number one there, the thing I put is also be a damn hero. You know, it's like, you are the hero of this story.
Zombieland, rule number 22.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's as the GM running a game, you have your players. The players need to understand that they are the heroes of this story. You're really good with that because, I mean, you sit there and explain. It's like, if you guys don't fix this, no one will.
That's why I kind of disagree with this.
How.
And that affects the history.
And you guys have seen long-term consequences.
This is why I kind of disagree with this last, your character is part of the story, this is not your character's story. I don't agree with that. I believe this is your character's story. But it's also everybody else's character story, and
they're all
part of it.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like this is not your character story; it's your character's story.
I understand.
It's everybody's story.
But
your story is part of it.
That can be taken multiple ways.
Yes.
So, I just want to present that it does need to be everybody's character put together
mm-hmm.
as a group.
All moving towards goals. Yes,
yeah.
That's the big thing, is to have goals. Let me provide the second part of my commentary, which is the instance. I had a player. This was the first Ripper's game that I had played. He decided to play a doctor, who decided to have no fighting and no shooting in a Ripper's game, where he was going to hunt the horrors of the night. No fighting, no shooting, no investigation skills.
Oh,
he was purely a doctor.
So
he chose to sit at base and wait until wounded people came to him. I kid you not, he came every session, and they said, okay, we're going to go out and hunt the horrors of the night. Okay, have a good time.
Did he have fun?
I have no idea. But he often used the line, well, this is what my character would do.
But that's a perversion of that line beyond all
reason.
That is
an excuse for not...
Yeah, it's like... There's being logical and saying, oh, yes, I would play this doctor and he does this. But it's like, you are also... My thing was like, okay, what if you went to see a movie and Kirk decided just to... I'm not going to go out there. I'm just going to hang out in my room all day. While Khan is running around killing guys, I'm just going to stay.
It's a perversion of a number of these rules. You are
because,
correct.
Okay.
But the line... The line of, be active, participator?
Yeah.
I mean, that would have created an interesting story where you have a reluctant doctor going, oh God, why am I going out into the night?
Well,
we also had Noah's character.
But I was still out there and I still tried.
I'm not done talking.
Okay, sorry.
Sit back down, class.
Damn teachers.
I see you're playing games again.
That's the thing that I liked about your character. You had no fighting. You had no shooting. You were a private man going, oh God, I'm out in the middle of the night. You had a reluctant hero who was still out doing something.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I think of... This is what my character would do. This is, for example, tournament... Or not tournament game. CanCon game.
Tournament. Tournament game. I won CanCon.
Victory!
You, sir, win the internet.
You are
the paladin. We just got done being horribly just attacked by these plant things. One of the characters is off in limbo, being ran off this way. Paladin I said, I'm going after him. And the party's like, you can't leave us. We're going to die. I'm like, no, there's enough of you. You're going to be fine. And this is what my character would do. Mm-hmm. Guess what? Went out there, got him back, mm-hmm. came back. That's what I think of those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those types of things. Or innocent people being hurt.
It's essentially, Jeremy, the difference here in the words, you know, it's what my character would do, is in one instance you're using it as a sword, in the other someone's using it as a shield.
I guess, or innocent people are being hurt, and
right.
you start the fight,
but you're using
everyone else is saying...
Rather than using that excuse to not do something, you're using it to do something.
Right, instead of just going... Okay,
and it's not using it to do something to screw people over.
Yes. There's a difference between good roleplay, which is exactly what a paladin should do. Oh my lord, you guys are fine, deal with it.
Well, right.
And then the different instances where it's what my character would do, I would steal from another.
None of these people are thinking about...
That happens far too often for me.
None of these people are thinking about not screwing over the party.
It's one of the reasons I never play thieves.
Because
I've had such bad experiences with other people playing.
But you can play a thief and still be a fine
Well,
thief.
You know, a lot of players think, well, I'm a thief, so that gives me carte blanche to be a dick.
But that's why my favorite, that whenever I play a thief, I've always, always tried to play the Robin Hood route.
Let's go ahead and take this and move, since we've now moved on to number 5, where it's not harming other characters. This is a perfect example of that.
Mm-hmm.
On my little list, I actually decided to include what harm meant, because one of my players actually said... Oh, I didn't kill him, so I didn't actually hurt him.
What?
I did. He threatened.
Was he saving his life?
No.
Was he saving another person's life?
No.
Was he saving the world?
No.
He was harming him.
He was threatening them, saying, "If you take that action, I will kill you." And that's what my player character
was. Was there a really good in character, out of character role playing reason?
No.
Oh my God! These people are evil.
He was. Here's the situation. He was this uptight noble from Runmore, and he knowingly...
It wasn't me.
This was the Fern Soil game, never been posted. He knowingly allied with an escaped slave, an orcish escaped slave. And the escaped slave said, I'm going to free some other slaves. And the noble who knew he was an escaped slave said, if you help free other slaves, I will kill you. It's what my character would do. And since he only threatened him, didn't actually technically kill him, he didn't harm him.
That's still harming him because
now,
he's blocking another character's actions.
Let me go into a bit more refinement on this. That's why I said not stealing.
Like Nathan and me bantering back and forth about how you know in Wizards College.
But that's
likable.
There's a difference also between doing it with NPCs and doing it with PCs.
Mm-hmm.
Batman kicking the table and scaring the snot out of the penguin, that's fine. In knowingly intimidating another player, saying, if you take that action,
mm-hmm.
I will kill you, that's different. That's a form of harming.
Yeah.
Stealing from the party, being the rogue, going, oh, so you're going to share that 7 gold you found with...
Yeah.
Are you going to share that? Well, no, I'm the rogue. I'm going to stick it in my pocket. You're being a smarmy douche.
Yeah.
But
you have
to admit, that's kind of what rogues tend to do.
But!
And as a GM,
but,
never allow other characters to use on other characters, like, interaction skills.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to use my persuasion on it.
No, it doesn't work.
Yeah,
you gotta talk.
He has PC protection, it fails.
the way I say it is, go ahead. If you can persuade them in real life, then fine.
Unless, I have had a situation of like that in Ripper's Word. The player wanted to do it, it's like, my character can't do it, my character won't
right,
do it,
that's
I have
different.
To honor. I roll persuasion. The young, attractive, noble woman convinces the old, grizzled, you know, war veteran, would you do it to protect me? Oh, fine!
Let's see.
Somebody give me an excuse. Thank you.
There are some things in here that you can bend on, unless your players are evil incarnate.
Well, apparently mine are.
I guess so!
Dude, some of your players just...
You understand why I'm starting to draft up this contract as you learn more about them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I knew why you needed a contract.
Thief,
it's just...
If you have a thief character in the party, and he's like,
I'm a thief.
Well, the GM can help that quite easily by having some adventures where it's sneaking around, breaking into stuff, stealing things. That's very easy.
Unlike players who want to go off by themselves and break into a into the nobleman's house to steal all his stuff while all the other players are trying to figure out how they're supposed to continue with the quest they were giving.
Oh, we did that all the time.
Yeah, and then bitch about the GM for telling them no, they couldn't do it.
You're talking about good, Mike. You never bitch about that.
No, it wasn't. It was your brother.
I don't remember that.
And a game I was running. And because I wouldn't let him go and steal from everybody in town, he lobbied to have the game canceled.
Can I just...
Okay.
To switch games. So.
On a side note.
Okay.
Well, we made it through a whole five before we had a tangent, so go ahead.
Just quick tangent. Dealing with the opposite side of the coin of my character would do that. Mm-hmm. Is the question, would your character do that?
Oh, I've had that situation.
I was dealing with the first time role player who decided to play a mage. He was 13, 14 years old, and he should have been playing the rogue because he decided, oh, that sounds like fun. I'm going to go steal a horse.
Okay,
I do it in Skyrim all the time. You want to look at me funny? Fireball!
So
that's Skyrim, though.
But he's trying to sneak into the horse sellers in the city. He's no sneak skill, he can pop the locks with magic. But the only reason he was doing it was because the player thought it was funny.
So I said,
okay, go right ahead. And I let him do it. And I said, make your sneak roll. And he rolled, a 14 or something. And I rolled the listen check for the guy sitting in the stable, and the guy rolled a natural 20. I'm just like, okay.
Consequences.
This is how I talk.
Yeah.
Because basically the mage ended up taking a shovel to the back of the head. So.
Yeah, I mean, you turn that consequence into something else. I mean, the mage gets captured. Or potentially he's going to be hung the next day. You know,
that's exactly what
happened. Well, as a GM, you can't be malicious about that.
No, I was not malicious.
But in situations like that, you might get accused of it.
Okay.
It's like, oh, of course he hears me, blah, blah, blah. But it's
the nice thing about that game is that was a game where I was rolling completely in the open. Mm-hmm. They saw that natural 20.
I like rolling.
I don't care about rolling in the open or behind the screen, because... Whatever. If you want me to pick up the screen, I will.
I mean, that's part of the trust is between player and GM.
I put the screen in front of my players most of the time so they can't see how good I roll. That way I can go, oh, I missed.
My thing is, though,
or 35.
Doing harm to other players should be a standard. That should be a badge you hand out. I mean...
Badge.
Unless you're playing an evil game.
Unless you're
playing
an evil game.
Half the fun of my evil Star Wars game is plotting to kill...
Even an evil game, you may not necessarily want to kill the other players.
Killing the other players is a problem.
Yeah, that.
I'm still stuck on wanting to kill the players for the brothel.
Yeah.
No, it's a PC.
Oh, is it?
First iteration. Me talking about campaigns that started and then died a fiery death, and then started later and went on to greater things.
But rogues can cause issues, but they don't have to.
Well, that's a very fair point.
They don't have to cause issues.
No.
GMs just have to be a little bit more
room whimpering at me and licking my hand.
Diego.
I want your chicken.
I don't have a chicken.
No, there's chicken.
You do have to just be with those particular classes that
it's not a class, it's a mentality. Because you can have the exact same thing.
It is a mentality, too. But, at the same time, some of it is communication. Talk to your player, too.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they're possessed by Cthulhu-esque monsters like some of yours, and then just, I don't know, stab them in the chest.
Right.
Tried that, they got back up.
So, you're number six.
My number six was understand the system will allow things to slide. My number six, because one of the things, as some of my listeners will know, is I have an unfortunate amount of rules lawyers.
Yes.
I have.
Well, they do exist.
I I seem to have found statistically well more than I figured I would.
Yes.
One of the things I have to constantly remind them of is luck. The core rulebook for Pathfinder is well over 400 pages. Mm-hmm. And the Bestiary. And the Bestiary 2 and 3. And the Ultimate
and the
Combat.
Advanced DM's Guide.
You can't
memorize it all?
No. I have better things to do with
really?
My brain power.
Oh, come on.
Really?
There's not much better things to do than memorize those books from cover to cover.
So I specifically said, look, there are going to be times where somebody does something that seems completely reasonable. I want to hop up this 5-foot wall. I have no armor. I'm like, okay, you hop up the 5-foot wall. He needs to roll.
No, he doesn't.
No, he doesn't.
He jumps.
It's in combat.
There's a comical little bit where he flounders a bit trying to get over it. But
they're just like,
and he brings a rock over and climbs up, falls down.
They just sit there and kind of go, well, it's here in the rules. It's here. I'm like,
no, he doesn't need to roll.
It's like, I don't care.
Here, I'll tell you what, I'll roll it. Okay, he passed. Actually, he critically passed.
It's one of those things where
he's flying now.
Understand the system, but don't be a dick about it.
Yeah.
The next person that says he has to roll gets hit by lightning and explodes, turning into gold.
But in the rules, it doesn't.
For the rest of the players.
It does now. It's a spell.
One of my favorite instances of this, actually, was in the module Red Hand of Doom. When you look at the here in the 3.5 monster manual, it says he has a bite or 12 rakes.
Holy crap!
He can bite you or he's just sitting there slashing you up. My personal favorite is in Red Hand of Doom, there was a conjunction typo. It said bite and 12 rakes.
Oh dear.
And his bite included a grab attack, so he'd bite you, grab you, and then claw you to death with 12 attacks. And that goes, I understand the system, but you know what? That was really kind of funny. Made the comment really dangerous.
Do you want to comment on this one? Because I'll go ahead. Okay.
I showed it to him, like, what's that word? And. Never thought a conjunction could kill you, huh?
So, do you want to be a rules lawyer, or do you want to take 412 points a
day? It was so funny.
Let me think here for a second.
Now, on the sane side of things, because sane. I'm going next, Andre will explain the non-sane side.
Because I've seen it all.
And then on the sane side of things, keep in mind, those of us who play a lot of these games will see a rule and trying to be helpful will present something.
Yeah.
So,
well, there's a difference. Generally, as a GM or even as a player, you can tell when they're not being, if they're being
right.
Confrontational or a dick about it.
Right.
It's like, well, you know, in the rules that this requires a
right.
will save.
And just,
it's like,
just
yeah, I know.
Don't be confrontational about it. So,
I mean,
it's
like, whatever the GM ultimately decides,
that's
is what
like,
you go
you're
with.
The evil GM, so you always require it.
Well, yeah. Obviously, I'm the sadistic GM.
Yeah. Although you have to admit, it was
awkward
pretty
silence.
Awesome when Jeremy's character lost his hand and I was double crippled.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, he tried to, you know, ride on the back of El Diablo.
No, he wasn't double crippled. He was perfectly fine.
My guy? No, my guy was
double
crippled.
Your character.
Yeah, I was gimped in both legs and I had to take, like, running or speed something to actually counteract one of it. And it was like,
that's
I can't
okay.
move.
He ended up being able to shoot without his hands, though.
Like yes.
Well, no, you had
yes.
like the gold hand, didn't you?
Yes, the Deadlands game I ran was exceptionally brutal and deadly. But
that's Deadlands.
You guys still had fun, so I don't care.
Well, we jumped into a lot of the violence.
Oh, yes. Because
yeah. we're like, very good about that.
Huh, slavers.
Ba 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 ba!
Huh, slavers.
Ba 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 ba!
Huh, we don't like that guy.
Ba 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 ba!
Oh, hey, look, the black coach. Ba 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 ba! Well, that didn't go over so well.
reload now.
To quote Jamie Hyneman, oh, whoops.
All right. Number 7 is probably one of my personal favorites, and a pet peeve of mine.
Oh, amen, brother.
I will keep it moving.
I will devote my attention to the game.
But my favorite thing to do is detract for the game.
Candy Crush Saga. I still have
Let me read it here. I love it. It's like, I will devote my attention to the game, and if I cannot, I will step away from the table until I can. There are things going on in the game that require my attention and are far more interesting than checking out my cell phone, Tumblr, or LOL cats. I agree that I am here to kick ass and take names, not internet surf. And you define attention.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on the game.
Yes, I did.
Focus on the game and story. If you have a phone call that you need to take, step away and take it. It makes talking on the phone easier, and it does not subtract from the game. It went for everyone.
Yes.
Fail.
And for me, my pet peeve is never... hasn't been the electronics or anything like that, because really all people I play with are generally pretty good about it. But I used to have a player that would sit there and read a book. They would sit there with an old D&D book and sit there and read, which led to things like, I cast Fireball in the middle of the group.
Or I cast
Because he wasn't paying attention, he would do things like that. And when I first started out, I was like, okay, well, you realize that if you do that, you're going to hit these people. And then I just stopped. I was like, okay, he just cast Fireball amidst everybody. And then the other players took care of it.
And then harm other players didn't matter anymore.
This is the same guy who did Shocking Grasp, Cast Iron Submarine.
On the Cast Iron Submarine.
While they were in the Cast Iron Submarine.
Yeah, everybody stopped their conversations in that battle because we were trying to plan how we were supposed to attack this thing. And just looked at it.
There's a giant celestial dire shark attacking your sub.
I cast Shocking Grasp. And a cast iron sub, yeah.
Even the dwarves who were running the sub were like... as everything is going exploding.
What's your intelligence right now? Because my dwarf's intelligence is not that high.
My dwarf's intelligence is a 4!
And I understand that's a bad idea!
And I understand that's a bad idea.
I haven't taken
the
psionicist class yet.
But
I'm just greedy and evil at this. Well, no.
But, I mean, apparently you've had more problems with people sitting there with their devices. Now... I know we still have devices around the table, mm-hmm. but I think, especially Wizards College, it's not a huge issue. I use it entirely for...
I have to, or else I understand. Especially with spell books, with spells, all that stuff.
Oh,
especially
God.
Because you guys are not... A lot of you, this might be the first time you're playing a caster, and you kind of go, okay, turn on bull strength. What does that do? Okay, all right. That's fine.
All I have to say is thank
Hero
God for
Lab.
Hero Lab.
Yeah, Hero Lab.
If I didn't have Hero Lab, I'd be screwed.
Especially since with some of the updates they've made to the math and how Pathfinder works and how Mutant's Masterminds works.
Oh, yes. I would have players who would literally... So let's actually call up one of my other games that died a horrible flaming death. It was the first time I ran Hook of the Vigil. They were trapped on an island... was a prison that everyone had died, and it was like zombie madness. They were trying to figure out how to survive and escape.
Zombie madness.
This island. I had two players who, I kid you not, would sit there on their laptops and play things like League of Legends. They would play video games while we were trying to game. And I'd sit there and go, I run down the hall. The hall's currently a screaming hole to the abyss. What?
We already talked about the abyss earlier.
I mean, I literally had two players who played video games. And I killed the game. I was like, alright, I'm done. And they're like, well, we didn't want to play this game anymore. Good. I'm glad you did. We moved on and then went to the dragon game, which was far more entertaining. I had players who would sit there, and it especially got bad when they got smartphones, because for those players, I banned their laptops. I said, you can't bring them anymore. When they eventually came back after throwing their hissy fit. So now they do this. I go... Put it away. But it's not my turn. Put it away. The next hit's a crit if you don't put it away. He's using a heavy pick and power attack. Not quite critical.
Ouch.
Now, I understand, especially in games where I run high levels, because my games tend to run long. How you get, mm-hmm. how it's really tempting, you know, alright, I know it's going to be another 20, 30 minutes before my next turn.
Sure.
I can understand checking your email really quickly, but not sitting there on Tumblr, because I'd sit there, I was playing things like Call of Cthulhu, where it's a really tense moment, and so I'd go, and you go, what? This guy just posted a picture of this guy's schlong, and it's painted green. I'm like, well,
thanks.
There goes all the tension.
Like, thanks, dude. I'm not really wanting to speak with killing tension in a Call of Cthulhu game, because, you know, I'm horrible.
Or even a serious moment in City of Angels, you know, the chemist just unleashed unholy
but
hell.
You have to admit that some of the tensest moments that we've had in the Call of Cthulhu game that's been run with you playing it have happened because of your character. So,
well, you know,
and the thing that would also get me is I have a player who I understand he's a manager. He manages a store, but he wants me to pause the recorder so he can take a phone call. I was like, just step away from the table.
Wow.
Yeah.
My problem is that I'm always exhausted after, because I work the Saturday mornings.
Yeah,
so it's like,
that's fine.
It's like, I'm just going to lie down on the couch. If I fall asleep, just go without me.
That's fine. You've perfected the possum. You just lay down and when you choke, you make a critical hit.
Mm-hmm.
You've done it like 3 times. I'm okay with it. It's called the possum.
Yes. Like, Nathan, pull the head.
18.
Natural 20.
All right, that's fine.
And we're just like, looks at the guy.
All right, now, he's out again.
But I've particularly had some trouble with that.
I've critically failed a couple of those rolls too, haven't I?
But it's much funnier when you crit on it, because it's literally like, huh, right, natural 20, I got a 38.
It goes
okay.
The gamers where, like, the barbarian shows up for that one combat.
Yes.
And
kills everyone and then leaves.
And then goes,
see you later, guys.
Blood, death, and vengeance. I mean, that one, and it's situations like that that make gaming hilarious and awesome. But it drives me crazy when they have those distractions, and when it's a trivial distraction, and not if it's like, I need to have my phone here, I need to keep checking to see if
that's
something very important. And as a GM, you understand that. But if it's taking away from things, if it's that much of a distraction, maybe you shouldn't be there. Type of thing.
It also gets in the way of the dice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is that.
Because people forget, oh god, you hit my iPhone with your dice!
What?
They're little dice! Oh god, you're gonna crack the screen!
Well, it's not my fault you bought a phone the screen cracks with 3 ounces of pressure.
For the record, that's why I have this.
Damn, screen breaks so freaking easy. It's not even glass. Well, so is mine, but mine doesn't shatter at the merest look at it.
I throw this thing at the wall and it still doesn't break.
And then there's Gorilla Glass. That thing's supposed to be designed
to take
the original
Nokia is just bounced off concrete.
Oh yeah.
Literally.
Doink, doink, doink.
Oh,
I still have a Razor, a Motorola Razor. The thing's been through the washing machine and it still works.
They do say it's, of course it's, and of course it's up to the DM to offer an entertaining game. Well, it's actually up to everyone.
Everybody has to.
It's not solely on the GM. I mean, it's. Yeah,
it's up to the players too.
Yeah, it's
everybody's got.
Everyone is involved in that.
A GM can only take it so far.
Yeah, I mean, because as a GM, you can present the situation. You can have reams of notes and be like, "Okay, here's the situation." And if all the players are like, "Meh, I'm gonna go become merchants."
Unless the game,
I mean,
is
it's like, okay, I'm gonna go run this for other people who actually want to play.
If it's a merchant game, fine.
I know that feeling.
Yes. I mean, and I've just had to sit down and have the talk with people before, not in a very long time, thankfully all of my players now are quite, you know, sane, but have to sit down and go, okay, we're going to play this game. You are making heroes. You cannot play someone who is chaotic evil because this guy is playing a paladin.
But I want to be a merchant who sells faces.
No evil.
Skin the faces of our enemies and sell them. I'll put flowers on them.
If this is a problem, you do not have to play.
But I want to play. I want to play with that.
The paladin's okay with this. Just make sure he rolls up a backup pair.
No. I've had to have that discussion with people. It's like, all right, we're going to play a superhero game. You are making a superhero. Make sure they are a hero. And not this whole... Well,
I am the knight. I am a loner. I don't play well with others.
In all fairness, you're the one who made Turnkey. Just in all fairness.
Oh, he's a one-off.
But Turnkey's a one-off.
No, he's a three-off.
That's true, three-off. But he wasn't part of the core group.
And he's been a reoccurring character ever since.
That's not my fault. Yeah, that's all on you.
Well, because I knew I wasn't going to be there. Like, I was going to be there as a guest. I'm like, okay, there we go. But at least he's a hero. And while I was there, I didn't do any, like, well, I don't work with you guys. I'm going to go over to my own thing. Because that would have been boring. Like, I'm going to go... It's like, oh, hey, I found this Marotak ship that's waking up in underneath my base. I'll deal with it myself. It's all good.
I'm going to... Well, that was a quick catch.
Yes, but distractions annoy the crap out of me.
Holy crap, I think your number 8 is way more PG
Yes. I had to make that one PG particularly.
What, number 8?
Yeah.
Yes.
If you make someone uncomfortable, the blog one is, if you make someone uncomfortable, apologize and talk to them about it. I'm going to try and read this with Smurfs included. I have a rule in my games, and that rule is nothing Smurfs, anything else. Simple, clean, elegant. No sexual conduct. It's weird often. I've had seduction attempts, obviously, and that's fine. I've had characters deeply affected by rape, and you've had someone negotiate time with a skimpy alien to reanimate a cat for the purposes of sexual pleasure as part of a heist.
What?
That would be a game I would be like, I'm done.
I'm done, yeah.
Middle of the game, I'd be walking out.
They were playing Fatal.
Like, dude, what are you doing? I'm going home because that's just messed up.
So tonight we're going to play Fatal.
And this is the crucial thing here. Nothing
no.
Smurfed anything else on screen. And if you're thinking, ha, I'm going to skip that line.
oh, my.
And that's the point. Situations like the ones we find ourselves in on a weekly basis, it's easy to make people feel uncomfortable. Maybe it's as blatant as discussing dead babies or other things, but maybe it's something much more benign, like being rude or chatting them up in character. If you think you might have upset someone, then ask them quietly. And if you have, apologize and stop talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not rocket science. That's how existing as a functional social human being works. And somehow, because we're pretending to be halfling for a bit, we often forget how to do it. So, you know, be nice. Be extra nice. No one's ever going to think any less of you for it.
Let's see, Andre's version is...
So is it a porn on the table?
Oh, I have a whole list of things for this one. Number 8 was actually one of my big sticking points.
Andre's is 3 sentences.
Okay, so Andre's, of course, being... If I'm offensive or making people uncomfortable, I will apologize. Also, if I'm uncomfortable with something, I will inform the other player. It is the GM's responsibility to have a fun story where we can be awesome, not manage my social interactions.
I've had so many instances where I wish I would have had this one earlier, including horribly, horribly racist comments, which offended me to the point where I was like, we're done. We are simply done. And it's not even like my character saying this. It was the people. And that bugs the hell out of me. I can tolerate a whole lot. One of the big things is, I will apologize, because a lot of the things that, look, we're friends here, right? We're supposed to be able to hang out,
mm-hmm.
We're supposed to have fun.
Well, it's the whole that this is a game, right? I mean,
but we're here for
games
fun.
Imply
but
fun.
Some people are just like, well, I don't want to apologize because that admits that I was wrong. I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And then I also have... I will also inform people if I am uncomfortable with something. Because a lot of times, sometimes people are like, oh, well, those two people are laughing. It makes me terribly uncomfortable, but since those two people are laughing, I won't say anything. No. You're supposed to be having fun.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be fun for everyone.
It's a group thing,
and
yeah.
Some people
everyone should be
say
having
anything.
Fun.
And I said, no, you say
I
something.
I mean, all of us have been subject to, at some point in our gaming lifetime, us being at a game where, one, we're uncomfortable, two, we don't want to be there.
Or thinking there's no other game in town, so we can't leave.
Yes.
Or thinking that it would be a better option to jump out the third-story window where you're at to your guest, rather than stay in the room that you're in.
That's exactly what the story I was thinking about.
I mean, it had gotten so bad to the point where, I mean... People are like, I'm not sure I want to come back because of this type of humor. I'm like, all right, look, guys, calm down. This is one of the things that I also have to do. I will, at this point, I can actually pause the recording, look at them and say, strike one. You get to strike two, you're out of the game.
God. There is no strike.
Did they want some Xanax? Because I probably have some extra.
Yeah.
You sit here and chuckle at like, oh, these guys must be crazy. No,
no, they're not crazy.
No, I believe
No.
That's the horrible part.
That's just it, yes. We believe you. Because some of us have dealt with
this.
Those people are,
this.
One, no longer, like, I've had to deal with this. No longer a friend. Obviously, no longer in games. No longer a friend. Because at some point, something happened where I was like, that's it. You have gone through all of my patience, and I am done. You and I will never talk again. You can leave.
You've heard of Evil Mike.
Yes, I have heard of Evil Mike.
That we thought that was the only game in town. Oh, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
after one group broke up, thought it was the only game in town. I was so happy to lie to his face. I was so happy to pick up my
your chair
and lie his straight to his face. I'll see you next week. Never gonna see you again.
Yeah, some of us are very passive aggressive and like
bye.
Well, I mean, it's difficult. I mean, some of us are socially awkward.
That's something. I have friends with anxiety disorder who sit there and go, I don't want to be confrontational. I don't want to let people know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Number two, if anything, I'm trying to be sympathetic.
Yeah. Right. And as a GM, you need to be open to basically letting, obviously, your players need to know they can come to you after the game or in private and be like, dude, I was really... I mean, that could be an uncomfortable situation, but you have to basically be open to it as a GM. You have to be open to say, if anyone is having a problem, no judgments here. It's, you know, let me know. I want to know if anyone is uncomfortable.
It's supposed to be a safe. It's supposed to be a safe place, guys. Safety word for that. Yeah, it really is. I mean, I do not want to go to a place where. It's uncomfortable.
No, you don't want to. As a player, especially as a GM, I want to look forward to game. I don't want to go, game.
I've had those days, and I was a little running.
Uh huh. I've had them too.
I just get tired sometimes. It's like, there's nothing wrong with the game. It's just, I'm just so tired. I just don't want to go or do anything.
But that's perfectly fine. It's perfectly fine.
Well, you know,
fine.
I rather than come in and be a frickin' downer, buzzkill on everybody, it's like, I'm just gonna go home and go to bed. Like last week, it's just like,
fine. It's that foreknowledge of basically saying, hey, I'm exhausted, I'm not coming to game. That's not gonna hurt anyone's feelings. But if you put it just like, I hate you and hope you die. I'm not coming to game tonight.
I hope you all catch brain cancer.
Well,
and it's like, okay, slight problem there. Right now, I don't like you.
I'm uncomfortable.
Number eight is difficult too.
Sure, talk
with a new player.
Yes,
because you don't know.
Yeah,
you don't know.
You don't know. You don't know how they're going to take their humor. They don't know how to bring it up in the. I'm not comfortable with that. Okay, cool. Well, that's all you have to say.
Yeah.
Now it's solved.
Well, one of the things that I'm so glad some of my players point out, they're like, Andre, I really like romances in the story, but it's really awkward when I'm romancing NPC because it's you. I'm like, fair enough. The goatee doesn't do it for you. You're supposed to be a delicate elven woman.
Well.
Get a hand puppet.
This is a pretty print thing.
No, get the hand. I know it's a bag with googly eyes. Just look at it. It's an elven babe. She's beautiful.
And, I mean, I think all of us here are very much fans of the fade to black type of thing. You know,
yes.
I mean, especially when sensitive situations, especially sexual situations, have come up, it's always fade to black. I mean,
I always thought Nathan's sexual encounters with Wizard Trials were funny. Roll a d10.
We don't need a play-by-play.
Play.
If you want to play the Book of Erotic Fantasy, go right ahead.
That one was dumb. But the first the
Book
player,
of Carnal Knowledge.
That one was hilarious.
Well, that was tongue in cheek though.
But Good Mike.
But like the Book of Erotic Fantasy was serious.
Good Mike.
There's a difference between tongue in cheek and serious.
Good Mike had a twisted sense of humor, and. My elf was a whore. He really was. He slept with everything. And he's like, I'm like, elves are immune to human diseases. He's like, yeah, Jeremy, they're immune to elven diseases. So he hoarded up. He hoarded up good. Because he's an elf. Every place he went, whore, 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 whore. And then it's like, fade to black, whatever. And he's like, Jeremy, roll that. The save versus disease. What? what do you mean? Elven diseases get spread around.
It's true.
Actually, building off of that character, that's one of the things I actually like about number 9 is where you are a storyteller, because that's a perfect instance of,
yeah.
I have a personality, I have a character, I'm Kirk. the man who probably had so many interstellar STDs that you had to go...
Well, behind the scenes, he's putting on cells.
Not again. Someone's got pus.
Shame. Come on, Jim! Come on, man!
It's like the J.J. Abrams scene where his hands are all swollen, it's just not his
hands. Come on, guys!
He just shows up and goes, it happened again, and Bones goes, damn it.
Except everybody's heard this joke about Kirk. This is not the You know, have a character with personality, you know.
Yeah.
And one of the big things is part two on my contract, if I'm going to miss 1,000 times in a single combat, you'll have short descriptions. As to why.
Yeah.
You guys know I have notoriously bad players who would sit there and go, I got a one, I got a one, I got a two, I got a three, and they'll get angry about it. I'm like, stop. Stop getting angry about it. It's a game. You getting angry is making it really awkward and uncomfortable for everybody. Why are you missing?
Yeah.
Why? It's like, well, in this case, he raised his shield
and
deflected.
And that comes at a, I think to a point that is the, don't attempt to cancel out another action type of thing, instead of as a GM saying, you miss. Mm-hmm. Say, it's like, why did you miss? And then let them take care of it. Because then that gives them a chance to build on their failure and build on their, I missed because...
I woke up on the wrong side of the map this morning.
I missed because I'm off balance, or, you know, this guy's just too quick for me, or I swing and I hit the brick wall behind him and it shatters. Okay, great. Cool. That adds some more thing. Moving on. Now you feel like you've accomplished something. You move on.
You showed that wall what was for.
And sometimes that can be character development. I had a character that whiffed on so many balance rolls, I eventually decided that he had an inner ear imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
And he no longer liked riding in, like, cars or anything.
Yeah.
He only rode on horses for the entire story because horses can balance themselves and mice cannot. And it became a character point.
Yeah, and that's great. If you want to take that, it's like, well, I've been missing left and right in game. Okay, well, I'm gonna go. I want to go find a trainer to see, or I'm gonna go get a new sword because I this one's just not working for me. And it's still a long sword. Who gives it? It's like chuck and then go spend the 8 gold and get another long sword. But you know, make it an in game thing.
The balance of this one is totally wrong.
Sucks.
I need to punch peasants because
you can have fun with that. Well, you can have fun with punching peasants in the head too. But.
Crap! I can't hit the peasants either.
That's my preferred.
That's karma for you.
Running around as a noble, just taking my mounds of copper because whenever you raid a dragon horde, it's like 10,690. Just walk around the countryside, peasant money, throwing copper around, and this one peasant go, oh my god!
Now, if you're in a cart, as it's just riding as fast as possible, just throwing it in the air.
It's like to a much more economical, devastating extent, that's what Gorik did with gold statues.
But you have roads!
Chris, by the end of that campaign, he was 25th level, so...
You have roads now!
Yes.
Everywhere.
And just use it, and it's like, okay, makes sense,
you
would break the economy.
You have temples, you have roofs on peasant houses.
Uh-huh.
For those of you who would like to know what this story is, please see Gamers at Haven, episode 100.
That wasn't
yes,
episode
we did talk about it.
Golden ditches, probably.
Yes, golden ditches.
Fountains.
But yes, I mean, as a storyteller, that goes both ways. A lot of people immediately, as players, immediately think, well, now the story is on the GM. Mm-hmm. I'm just here to be present. And that's not how it works.
A lot of this list comes down to it's not on the GM, it's also on me. A lot of this list.
Like, you as a player have responsibilities. It's a little bit more limited than the GM. The GM has a wider scope. But you have firm control over something, and that's you.
Have you thought about accepting insurance from them? Like, I mean, physical premium money so that you can purchase insurance in case your sanity snaps?
That's what I spend all of my time with Warhammer on, because in Warhammer, I understand I'm going to die a horrific death unless I'm fighting Nathan.
And then he usually stomps me into the dust.
Ogres deserve it.
that's the one army you have trouble with, though.
Yeah.
They still deserve it.
They do deserve it.
Of anyone, the ogres deserve the most. That,
considering I didn't realize they're like the number one rated army.
I actually have
other hobbies other than D&D because of the stress of my players.
Speaking of which, we need to play some Warhammer sometime. Because I haven't played the new rules enough. I want to fiddle with them some more.
Demon Prince is delicious.
The table is now...
Eat me up.
Sturdy.
Yeah.
It's a thousand times better than it was.
We're finishing our gaming table. All right, so...
Which we'll have to move here into Kansas City when you move.
Ten. I will embrace failure, and story is king.
This is one we've already hit on a few times.
Not my stories.
Embracing failure. I mean, let's at least make it interesting. If you have to run from a combat, that's fine. Don't be one of those players. Don't be one of those GMs who are like, oh, you ran from a combat? Wuss.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times where you're like...
My general observation is some players don't... Running doesn't even enter into their mind.
It's a fight.
That can be a problem.
Running is always
an option. See the embrace failure.
Was running
failure.
An option the other day?
Which one?
Last week?
Yes.
Dang it!
Running is always an option. Running is always
We have done it before.
Remember.
A lot.
Remember.
My method of running is grab and teleport.
I have no set way of how you guys are supposed to resolve the situation. Here's the situation.
Yeah. As a GM, that's the best way to do it. Just don't go, well, they'll defeat him. It's like, well, just present, here's the situation. What happens, happens.
Stuff happens, and it's like, oh, this fight should be an easy fight, and oh my god, they're being slaughtered by stormtroopers.
Some fights are not designed for players to win. That's the bottom line, and some players need, as a player, you need to realize that. It's like, okay, sometimes the bad guy is more powerful than you. Sometimes the bad guy can kick your ass, especially early on.
In like superhero games,
uh-huh.
or superhero comic books, how often do you see the heroes get their trash kicked and then wind up in a death trap? We all love death traps. Death traps are fun, they're exciting, and sometimes they are
completely misnamed.
They are way, way over the top. For anyone who's listened to City of Angels, you know the Dr. Wicked, my 1970s villain. Who literally decided to have a room that his death trap was like a gorilla playpen. he threw the animal rights activist into the gorilla playpen and said, now what? Karma!
And sometimes the death trap doesn't need... That's an example. The death trap doesn't need to be brilliant. It's just... It's what the villain would come up with. It's like, yeah, you're tied up over a vat of acid. I know, unoriginal, but the villain just likes classics.
I'm a traditional villain.
It's like, yes, and you were tied up on railroad tracks.
Seriously, dude, no trade has used these tracks in years.
And I can lift.
Give me 20 minutes.
I can bench press a skyscraper and use rope. Play along.
Spoil sport.
Jeez.
I could have used the death laser from the moon, but I thought I'd be sporting.
Fine, I'll use the death laser. Hold on. That's what you get for being a dick.
Sure, nobody likes a douchebag.
Yeah, no, yes, as a player, you need to be ready to fail. It's always been a huge problem that I've seen is some players just do not... Failure is not in their vocabulary. And
I fail all the time. What I don't like is when a system is supposed to showcase...
Now, let me do a compare-contrast, because here's one of the things I've discovered. Failure in a superhero game is an inconvenience. It really is. I mean, you don't care so much. Failure in a fantasy game is something people get a lot more offended about because that means they're going to die. People automatically assume if you fail to that dragon, you are going to die a horrible death. That's one of the things that people just assume.
Well, dragons don't typically take prisoners.
Well, why not? Half dragons have to come from somewhere.
Oh my.
What's really funny is when, you know, all the female characters wind up in the dungeon and you have the dwarf who's lubed up and lying on the floor like, what the hell is going on?
Hello, sailor.
You didn't tell me it was a woman?
Yeah, I mean, as a GM, you can be
male or female. Just, you know, one of the things you have to understand is don't...
Uh-huh.
Don't kill the game horribly.
And I've had players who, when they fail or when they go down type of thing, it's like they're just like, oh, well, I'm dead. And they just throw their stuff down and they just walk, and they're just like ready to give up and walk away. And it's like, okay, dude, you're...
That's fourth ed for me.
Well, I was actually pretty convinced I was dead last time because I had that.
And I'll fully admit that there are ways to die in a game that suck. I mean, dying from a pit trap is kind of stupid.
I actually had somebody die from Phil Fever. That was my personal favorite. They actually failed enough fortune checks in a row that they actually died from Phil Fever at D2 con per check.
Oh.
Ouch.
They were the fighter.
Nice.
They failed that much.
But then there's you know, I mean, epic ways of dying.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, in the first Keep on the Shadowfell, my guy basically bull rushed the bad guy into the portal and then got tentacles, grabbed him and thrust him in there. And I'm like, you know, this is fine. He's the paladin. This is fine way for him to go. He's heroically shoved the bad guy into the abyss and he's being lashed in and it's like, you know what? He saved everyone else. He's happy. We're good. But
10 is probably the hardest one, I think, for human nature, though. Because when you think of a game, games are to be won. Now, a role-playing game is different.
Right.
Now, we know this. But there's still an aspect
of winning.
Hence the question. Anytime you first say, I play role-playing games, how do you win? You don't. What do you mean?
Right, but...
Well...
But if you take...
Technically, you do, because every story arc has a completion.
That's,
and winning would be...
That's where You don't really win, but you do this comes in. There is no win... It's not Monopoly, it's not Sorry,
but
it's not a board game. There is no win-lose condition.
But there is, though. Because when you reach that goal... And you overcome that.
Absolutely, but if you're talking to a layperson, it still takes more than if they say how do you win? It's not like I'm playing Magic the Gathering. I have to deplete the other person's points.
I'm taking it beyond the layperson now.
Okay, no, that's fine.
Put it into a role playing.
Oh yeah,
because I believe this one is probably the hardest one. And if you can say that you can always not be affected by this, I
mm-hmm.
would say...
Oh, yeah.
I call...
Fundamentally, it's awesome when it works. When you make that check and you have your epic level of awesomeness, but it sucks when you fail. It does. It sucks when you fail.
Everyone is going to have that time where...
Some of us more than others.
They go, I'm dead. It's going to happen to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So... Number 10, and this goes from the same side, I think is another one where GMs and players have to look at the person and say, okay, again, communication. And if the person needs to walk away, fine. This is great advice, but keep in mind, that goal still triggers something in their mind, that pleasure sensor, that whatever.
Well, I mean, honestly... When I thought, and that was my real first experience with a solid player close to character death.
Mm-hmm.
And my first thought wasn't, oh crap, oh no. My first thought was, I wonder what I can try next.
Mm-hmm.
I have players who take that even further. The character's not even deadly concerned on that.
Or they
just start rolling up their next character.
Right.
It's like,
That's a
number ten for me. Actually, comes from one of my sticking points. This is not hit necessarily on any of my foreign players. It's actually something I encountered in a game. I would rather fail to have a good failure than a pathetic
mm-hmm.
victory.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had one of those games where it's pretty mm-hmm. obvious? They just handed it to you, no real struggle,
yeah.
no nothing, and you're just kind of like, "Well, I didn't win anything.
It's a hollow victory.
Congratulations, you made 11th place out of 11 slots. I mean, I'd rather fail in an awesome way than succeed in a really crappy way. I actually had a GM who got so frustrated that we were an effective group. He had never encountered a group that worked well together, that focused on teamwork, and could communicate to overcome challenges. So he literally, at one point, said, okay, well, you guys win the fight. We rolled initiative, and he said, oh, you guys won initiative, you win the fight. And we went...
We didn't fight.
We didn't do anything. Well, you guys were going to win anyway. You guys worked too well together. I'm like, so do you want us to stop working well together so we can play the game?
Mm-hmm. Next time I'm going to punch a guy on my right.
I mean, it was...
Yeah, I mean, that's on the GM.
I would rather have a failure, which is embrace the failure part, mm-hmm. than this, as on my last one, being handed a pathetic victory.
Mm-hmm. You win the internet.
Because it always made me feel slimy. That's one of my sticking points.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. And finally, number 11.
I will enjoy the game.
Play the game, enjoy the game. You know, it's that whole, dude, you're playing a game.
I felt really dirty that I had to define the word enjoy.
Oh.
Because that,
now
that
okay, now thing. I have a question about these the definitions here. Sure. Is this because people specifically said, well, what do you mean by?
Yes.
You had to have synonyms?
Oh, God. Yes. I also had to include that first line.
I will enjoy the game.
No, down on enjoy. Like the game enough to come back without smurfing about other characters behind.
Oh, no, we can do bitching. It's acceptable on television.
I actually had to include that.
I like the game enough to come back without bitching about other characters behind each other's backs. Other synonyms with enjoy, relax, have fun, be entertained.
I actually had one of the games, Sword and Soil, which is one of my sticking points, where anytime I got together to hang out with my friends, like what we did last night playing Red November, or just sitting together doing dinner, it literally turned into a two-hour wine fest about each other's characters. I kid you not, I was like, so, the new Warhammer book came out. Oh my gosh, that guy is such a douchebag. I mean, why would he even think to cast Cure Moderate as opposed to Cure Light? I mean, it was such a... I was like... So, Warriors of Chaos hit really hard.
Let it go.
Oh my God.
I mean, weather. And there is such a thing as healthy bitching. Let's all admit this.
There are times when you kind of go, okay, that I don't think that was a good idea, but that I had to include that. Yeah, I had to define what enjoyment. I had to say that you like that there are other people in the game. I also had issues with that. I understand that this is not a personal competition between players because that's one mm-hmm. of my sticking points. Now, this is
it really, is a personal competition.
This is a real easy one to get carried off on. I have a few more I want to cover because I have one player in particular who, as soon as you start talking about your character, he instantly does the comparison. I have an AC of 24. I have an AC of 26. Cool. I have a plus 8 to fortitude. I was pretty proud of that. I only have a plus 6 to fortitude. Why do you have a plus 8? I was like, what? They're playing a paladin. You're playing a fighter.
The way the math works, dude.
it's one of those where it became.
It's like, wait a minute. What's your reflex save in Wizards College?
You like a 14?
God, why does he have a 14?
Because
you're a thief.
I had this especially happens now. I don't mind.
Have you seen my whole thing?
The Legolas Gimli, the competition between fighters, because that's funny. Yes. I like it when the fighters go, "I got 3, I got 4." Oh, I like that. Not the look. By my calculations, I'm doing 11.5 points of damage per round, and you're only doing 9.5. I went.
Give me your character sheet.
can I just say this is why I stopped playing World of Warcraft? Because the whole thing about DPS was ridiculous.
you sit there laughing. And for the next one, I understand this is not a campaign of terror waged by the GM upon players. I was accused of that. I was accused of actively finding out what they want to do in a game and crushing it.
Mm-hmm. I didn't laugh and go, yes.
It's a running joke.
It's happened in some recordings. It's that whole, it's like, well, you know, Andre is just going to listen to what we're going to plan and then come up with something against that. It's like, no.
That's not how it goes.
I've
as a GM, I already know what the villain's going to do. It's, you know, we're going to see how your plan works with how he's doing his thing, you know? Oh, my God, yes. Yeah, that... Mm.
And that's one of the things to understand, especially on that one. It's not a campaign of terror waged by the GM.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make it challenging. This goes back to the pathetic mm-hmm. victories. You have to make this challenging. Otherwise, it's just not fun.
I'm the sadistic GM, remember?
My first combat with Heroes for Hire, the campaign I'm running this with, they were all sitting there being all cocky and smarmy because they're third-level characters, and I beat the snot out with Knowles.
Yeah,
those are Knowles, scary.
With Knowles and
I had a
it was glorious.
In my last D&D campaign, which was many, many years ago, started off, I think it started off in third ed, maybe transferred to 3.5, but there was, and I think you guys might remember, there was an encounter. You guys almost got horribly killed by first level kobolds, and it's just because the kobolds knew you were coming. And they laid
traps.
In wait and
they,
set traps.
They,
and the dice
jerks.
Just wanted you all to die.
Those little jerks, they're like, we were in the sewers, and they rolled us, they rolled a ball, they rolled us something in front of the one direction, we went to turn and go back the other direction, they rolled something else, and then they put some sort of gas through a hole in the ceiling and choked us all.
Good.
Jerks. It was awesome.
They're trap masters, and they knew you were coming.
Yeah.
They're like, jerks.
It was awesome, but...
We don't want to die, so...
We're going to kill you all.
Unless, of course, you're kobolds from my set.
Oppress me! Oppress me! Hit me! Rape me!
Whoa, this is getting a whole...
whoa.
This is going to...
I can't go, I'll do it!
This is
you might hurt your arm!
I'm uncomfortable.
I'm not, send them over here.
Just one of the famous, just one of the lines I love from The Watchmen. He followed after me saying, hit me, punish me! I just walked away. Oh, what happened to him? Well, he tried on the Rorschach.
Yeah, that didn't end well.
Probably not an elevator shaft.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh man.
To give the darker side of this, the reason why I brought up the game contract is because of personal experiences, which I think as a GM you really have to know your players and know what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And I effectively had to lay out every sort of expectation I had within reason.
Yeah.
Sometimes
you have
to
do that. Yeah, sometimes you have to do that. Sometimes there are some players that you just... You reach a point where you have to lay it out and say, this is what I want from the game. Is this what you guys want from the game? If you don't play.
That's why I have...
If you don't, run your own game.
If you don't sign your name and we'll see you next game.
Yeah. So it's very nice. Very nice. I'm glad you've given us copies.
Yeah, this is great.
Great, now I know what I'm going to have to be signing the next time Ethan runs a game.
Or the next session of his game.
Yeah, I signed no such thing.
I don't need this with the Wizards College group. I just don't need it.
So you're saying I should start being a dick.
So so how many people died in your hooker killing basement? You want to be the first?
No,
that's that room over there.
Yes, that is. It's the room with the drain. There's a drain in here, but this is the game room. Let's show some civility in here.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think that's a great place to end our very long discussion. So, in a world where it's only available for download on GamersHavenPodcast.com.
It is 2007, and just a few years after the Marowak invasion, L.A. was destroyed, turned to rubble. However, like an angel, the city rose once more, becoming the City of Angels. The streets have become packed with gang war and supervillain-on-supervillain violence following the murder of the previous superhero group, the Rebels. Will the new kids on the block, the Guardian Angels, be able to reclaim the streets, or will they die trying? Mutants and Masterminds, City of Angels.
Sorry.
That is true, we do look
I'm
up
actually...
random things. We are back with a three-parter, which is, never a three-parter anymore.
I'm actually playing what I'm going to be talking about.
Nathan's going to be talking about something. I'm going to be giving you a review of one of the board games that we've managed to play recently called Red November. I'm assuming, Jeremy, are you talking about something?
Yes, I'm going. I haven't read it all the way through, but I'm going to talk about the first story that I've jumped into.
Okay, cool. And Noah?
I'll be having a little bit of a rant tonight. Rant rave about some nostalgia-based things that have been happening in the gaming industry over the last few years.
Okay, and Andre, you are welcome to participate in the three-parter if you so desire.
The what?
The three-parter.
Okay.
Rant, rave, review.
Okay.
Or other. But let's go ahead and just start with Nathan and go around the table, so...
What we're into.
Now? Okay. I'm actually going to talk about something I've been playing for the last 2 weeks. As some of you may know, I now have a job, which usually requires me to sit in a single location for long hours doing nothing.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Nathan.
Yeah, you know, everybody always sits there and goes, you know, I always wanted a job where I could do this. And it's like, yeah, I used to think the same way until I actually got a job where I could sit around and play video games, and now I wish there were people coming in. But anyways, I have a game that I got from GOG a long time ago, and I just figured it was already installed on my laptop, and I didn't feel like playing Rogue Legacy that day, so I popped on this game, and the game I've been playing... and I'm playing right now, even though the sound's turned off, is called Might and Magic 7.
Oh, my lord.
Yes, for Blood and Honor.
Oh, my lord.
Yep. That shows you how desperate I am at work, doesn't it? But anyways, Might and Magic 7 was a role-playing game that was released by 3DO Games and New World Computing. And I believe it was 1999? Let's see here. I can tell you real quick. No, I can't, because there's nothing up there. Well, no, I don't know when it came out, 1998 or 1999. It was created by John Van Canahem, who is the creator of most of the Might and Magic games, from what I understand. Deals with typical role-playing games, got a first-person perspective with free movement, travel through dungeons and stuff. You have multiple races that you can actually play as, including dwarf, goblin, human, and elf in this one. The next one, Might and Magic 8 actually adds additional races, but not this one. You have your standard classes. You know, you've got your magic user, you've got your fighter. This game is called a knight. You've got your thief, you got your ranger. They throw some interesting stuff into the game. Now, Might and Magic has always been kind of skill-based with the later releases from, I believe it's 3 or 4 on. And the way it works is you have skills which allow you to utilize various different things. Like, so if you want to use a sword, you have to have the skill to use a sword. Once you have the skill to use a sword, then you can put points into the skill to make yourself better at using the sword. And then once you get a certain number of points, you can go to someone and train up to become an expert in the sword, and so on and so forth. Well, Might and Magic 7 introduced something for the first time that hadn't actually existed in the game prior to that, and that is Grandmaster. Grandmaster is the best of the best. What this means, though, is that because of the way they introduced Grandmaster, certain people get certain skills at certain levels, and the only way you find that out is by actually playing them. So you're playing, say, a ranger, and you think, well, a ranger would get Grandmaster and Bow. No, ranger does not get Grandmaster and Bow. Grandmaster and Bow goes to the archer, and so on and so forth. And each one has different skills, and every class has set of skills that they Grandmaster that nobody else does, which means actually making a group suddenly becomes a choice of what do you actually want to do with the group. Say you want to make potions, you want to do alchemy. Well, you have a sorcerer and a cleric and a fighter and a thief, right? Well, you're not going to be able to make the best potions in the game because you can't grandmaster as an alchemist. Only the druid can be a grandmaster at alchemist. But to make the druid to get grandmaster at alchemy, you're going to have to drop one of either your cleric or your wizard, which means that you're going to reduce the effectiveness of your spell casting because they can't cast spells as good as, say, a cleric or a sorcerer can. Graphics are on par for what you'd expect to see from the late 90s. Uses direct 3D. It runs very, very well if you get the GOG version. The GOG version is $5 or $5.99, $6. The story is actually really interesting. It's very long-winded. I will tell you that now. I've been playing about 40 hours now, and I am not even out of Act 1, and there's three acts in this game. The story details with your people starting off winning a tournament or at some sort of competition, and you win your own castle and lands. And then everything ensues downhill from there. The world is always very interesting. If anybody's ever played Heroes of Might and Magic, they know the setting somewhat. Did you have a question? No, you kept raising your hand.
Nope. I'm putting my hand. I have something for you after. But.
The game is well done. The adventuring is hard. It's not kill your friend hard, but it's hard enough to make you actually, you know, plan your combat to help make sure that you stay alive through it. They added also something else in the earlier ones. Combat's turn-based, but unlike the monsters, like in 6, which was the first one to use the engine that's used in 7, when you went into turn-based combat, once your four people did their actions, the enemy got to move and you got nothing. They actually allow you to move in this one. You can do 5 steps, basically. And that allows you to basically shoot and then move and then shoot and then move to keep distance between you and the enemies. It doesn't always effectively work, especially if you get caught up in a tunnel or whatnot, but it does help. Might and Magic series has been going strong since 1986 or 85. There are 9 games in the series currently.
10 is playable now.
There's a demo. 10. But 10 is not officially out yet.
It's according to Steam, and this is the classification. It's the alpha build. It is part of their buy it and play it now whole thing.
It's Ubisoft. It's a stupid idea. All right, but I'm not going into that. There are 9 games that are out currently that are finished. How about that?
There you go.
That being said, there are tons of spin-offs. You've got the Heroes series. You've got Crusaders of Might and Magic. There's a couple of turn-based combat ones on the PlayStation Network as well. I don't know much about them. But in the what you call just the Might and Magic line, there are 9 currently out. 10 is on its way. 10 actually goes back to the same style of play that hasn't been seen since Might and Magic 5. Which is, it's tile-based, like Legends of Grimrock, or what Legends of Grimrock was based off of, which is Dungeon Master from all the way back in the old days. Game is good. I'd probably give it like a 3 out of 5. It's not fantastic. It does have some problems. Damn game crashes constantly, and on top of that, if you accidentally alt-tab out of it and you come back, the screen goes all funky. It has to do with DirectX. It has nothing to do with the game. It's Windows having changed in the, 14 years since the game came out. But if you like long RPGs, really like long RPGs, it's definitely worth checking out. And $6, it's not a bad idea. Or bad buy. Although I will say, I was extremely excited because they were releasing the Das Schwarze Auge, the Realms of Arcania games. Having looked into that one and spent money on it, I can say this pretty much emphatically now. Don't buy it. Unfortunately, it doesn't work. Skills don't work. Spells don't work. The game engine is broken. It crashes constantly. They're fixing it constantly, but as it stands right now, don't spend your money on it. Let them bring it up to actually a fully functioning game before you buy it. But this is worth $6. You can't go wrong for $6 on this one. And if you like this one, you should check out 8, because 8 is even better. The Day of the Destroyer. You get to play Minotaurs.
The Review.
All right, so I've just started. I was looking through old-school Call of Cthulhu-esque stuff, but I was looking at, instead of Lovecraft, the stuff that he had actually wrote, I was looking at some of the other writers, And two of them, that two kind of collections that came up, or books that came up, was Robert E. Howard's Ancient Terrors. It's a collection of his stories, and also The Yellow Sign and other stories. Now, I've started Robert E. Howard's Ancient Terrors. Now, Ancient Terrors is actually a collection of his stories, and I've only gone through three so far. And the one thing I had forgotten is the time period that Robert E. Howard was writing in. So some of it took me a little bit by surprise. The nice thing about this collection of stories, though, is there's a gentleman who actually collected them and is kind of adding his own little take on Howard's writing and pointing to the different stories, what it points out on things like religion. Like, a lot of this talks about a reincarnation. The first two stories I've read, it talks about the Asgardians and the Aryan race a lot, and I'm like, is he a Nazi? As time goes on, and as you look more in depth, you find out no, he's just looking at the science at the time. And also, he particularly would not have liked the Nazis anyway. The stories are racist, but they are interesting. These stories were published so far in this first one, if I can actually get to the beginning here. My apologies.
And who's the author again?
Robert E. Howard.
Oh, probably
Harris. This one that I'm looking at here is The Garden of Fear. It was actually originally published in Marvel Tales,
mm-hmm.
1934. And the gentleman he's using, it's a character named James Allison. And James Allison actually remembers his past reincarnations as well as his future reincarnations. And he seems to be dying. He keeps pointing out that he's hinting that he's dying, but he's telling these stories about his different incarnations. And this one is about Hunwolf the Wanderer and how he killed a man for the love of this woman, and they're running off, and the woman that he loves was kidnapped by a birdman, and he had to go after her. And there's this weird hut. Well, it turned out to be a tower. And the tower was surrounded by vampiric, though he didn't use the word vampiric, but basically vampiric flowers. That's what the Garden of Fear is. The one right before this, again, is another character, again from this James Allison, who dies, actually. And you're not quite sure if it's before or after this other reincarnation. This one has him killing a Cthulhu-esque worm. This demonic creature basically comes up from the depths and uses a pipe to whistle and play this eerie song, and this worm thing comes up, and he has to kill it with poison. They're very short, but very interesting. One thing you will notice as you're reading them is the hero kills the monster, and that is obviously different. Now, I'm no expert.
That's not a standard thing that happens in H.P. Lovecraft stories.
Right. But I'm okay with that because I want my heroes to kill the monster. And I also do like Cthulhu-esque monsters. And something that I'm trying to get when I'm reading through this is, should these be considered Cthulhu or not? Now, I am not an expert on this, and I think that actually makes this better, because I can just read it myself and kind of come up with an idea.
No, Robert E. Howard's stories are classified as part of the Cthulhu Mythos canon. He was really good friends with H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes. Now, this first story is Valley of the Worms, Weird Tales. And then he had a little story. This first story he published in here was actually not a Cthulhu story. It was just a little story that talked about Cro-Magnon Man and Neanderthals. The Neanderthals were basically monkey people. It was totally not scientific at all. But basically, the Neanderthals, somebody in the village basically grabbed this woman. He took her into the forest, was going to do bad things to him. The Neanderthal showed up, killed the guy who's going to do bad things, kidnapped a woman. Another man came along who's our hero, tracked down the Neanderthal, killed the Neanderthal, and took the woman as his prize, but it's okay because the woman already loved him. So it was a short little story. It was really neat. But I'm enjoying this collection, and I also found it for like $2 on the Amazon store. The next one I'm going to be reading once I finish this one is The Yellow Sign by Robert W. Chambers and other tales. It's a collection of all of them. So I'm hoping to kind of... The Yellow Sign actually looked very interesting. The King Yellow and all that kind of good stuff. It's supposed to be also talking about the play that drives everybody nuts. And this is kind of from someone who doesn't have a lot of background in Call of Cthulhu, but likes all the critters. And yes, I did call the monsters... I did call the Great Old Ones and all those other things critters and monsters. So please don't send me too much hate mail. Anyway.
Hate mail.
Delicious.
Delicious, delicious tears.
The review. All right. I actually was able to sit down with a few people at this table, actually, and play a cooperative game called Red November. It's put out by Fantasy Flight Games. The revised edition is available. It's $29.95. It is, I'll be there as a misprint on the back of the book where it says it's for 1 to 8 players, whereas the rulebook actually states it's from 3 to 8 players. What's nice about this game is it's technically cooperative. It's a technically co-op game.
Until the end.
Until the end, yes.
Screw you and leave everyone else their fate.
We did win without having to do that.
Yes.
So did we.
Yeah, yeah. And we got baked to death, dude.
Oh, wait. We did win.
We died.
By dying.
Essentially, the premise of the game is the premise of the game is you are all gnomes on a gnomish submarine that has encountered, well, problems.
That's a nice way.
I.e., every problem.
I.e., everything has a problem. One unique mechanic about the component about the game is depending on the number of players you have depends on how much time you have, quote unquote, to play the game. There's a track around the board that goes up to 60, and that's the number of minutes you have before your rescue sub gets there. And whatever actions you take during during your turn have a certain number of minutes, or you can assign a certain number of minutes to it. So it's like, I need to open this hatch, so that's a 1 minute. I want to pump out this water as my action. Well, you can take up to 10 minutes to do that, depending on what you want to do. Your gnome has a certain action, so say he needs to go work on the fix the reactor and jettison some of that excess heat. He can go do that, and say he's a couple rooms away. He has to roll. He basically has to spend 2 minutes to get there, and then he can spend up to 10 minutes in the room fixing the reactor. Depending on how many number of minutes you have, you then roll the d10, and if you get that number below, you succeed at the task. Now, there are additional items you can get, like you can go pick up fire extinguishers or pump manuals, things like that, that can help you, or drink grog, which helps you, but also means you can pass out, to fix certain problems. And then you sort of have to manage that. And the longer you go, the more events happen in that time frame. So it's like if you basically are doing stuff for 12, quote-unquote, 12 minutes in-game, well, that means you could have several events happen. Now, most, like, 90% of the events are bad. The ones that aren't bad are the ones where nothing happens. fires break out, hatches get blocked, the missile system malfunctions and starts to launch. The nuclear reactor, because yes, it's, of course it's a nuclear, it's a Gnomish submarine, so it's nuclear, can start to overheat. Your asphyxiation level can start to asphyxiate to death. As the disabled sub is descending, the pressure builds. Three ways to essentially die in the game, or basically have it end for everybody, is asphyxiation. So the more fires that basically break out, the more asphyxiation goes out. The more asphyxiation track builds. And you can go fix the oxygen pumps to basically reset your oxygen level. There is a heat track, so you can bake to death, and you can go reset the heat track by going and fixing the reactor. And then there's pressure. You can basically be crushed to death, and that's, you can go fix that in the engine room. Beyond all of that, I mean, there's the timed, say you pick an event, it says, all right, put the missiles launch token at plus 10, so you go 10 minutes from that, and you could end right there if nobody manages to get to the missile room and stop the missiles from launching. You can also, I mentioned you can drink, there's grog, because all gnomes love grog, and they are inherently inebriated at all times. You can drink grog to go into a room with fire, or you can drink grog to give yourself a bit of a bonus in taking care of a task. But the problem is, after you drink grog, your inebriation level goes up, and you could pass out for 10 minutes. Which means all more stuff eventually happens. As Sarah mentioned, in the last 10 minutes of the game, once you go past position 10, if the situation looks entirely hopeless, you can opt to abandon your comrades.
Is that what happened in your guys' last one?
No. Okay. We actually managed to hold out until the rescue sub got us. But if there's 10 minutes left and it looks like all is lost and you are all going to lose, you can attempt to, if you get to an exterior hatch and leave, you can abandon your comrades. You give up all of your, you basically take yourself off the board, and basically you win if the sub is destroyed. If the sub is not destroyed, you lose, because your friends managed to survive and have told about your horrible cowardice. After going through the event deck once, you add in the Kraken card, which means after all of this, you've gone deep enough that the big Kraken can attack your ship, which can do various glorious things, like destroy your ship and eat you. You can go out and try to kill the Kraken. That's always entertaining. Harpoons help with that. It's actually a fun, I felt it was a fun, quick game. I managed to sit down, I played this with Jeremy, I played this with Sarah, I played this with Andre, and I thought it was a lot of fun. It's not a very serious game, it's really very lighthearted, you know, just spend some time and let your brain relax type of game. I like the cooperative and uncooperative nature of the game. You're just playing it, and really what I like about it is it's not overly complicated. It's kind of complicated to explain, but it's one of those things when you start playing it, you're like, okay, I figured it out. But it's entertaining at least, and I figure it's worth the $30 that I paid for it. The revised edition is good. The non-revised edition is in a smaller box. It's $25. It used to be one of their silver edition games, and it was in a tinier box. I don't know really the main differences between it. I think the revised edition has, just judging by the contents list, there's a lot more cards in this edition than there in the old edition at 64. This has over 100. So, different ways to go, I guess. Fun game. I recommend it as if you need to unwind your brain and you don't want to sit down and play a 4-hour game, and just sit down and play a you know about a about a 1 hour, hour and a half, if that, game of just hilarity, really, because, you know, gnomes running around being drunk is always entertaining. So I recommend it. Red November, fun game. So, and what did you guys think? You played it.
I thought it was terrible.
I own it, so I had a great time when we played it before, but we were using the basic rules. We weren't using the advanced rules.
Yeah.
There was only three of us playing it, though, so with a few more people, I think, we would have tried the advanced rules.
And you have the old edition?
No, I have this one.
You have this one?
Okay. I've got it, same one. I have the revised edition. I've never seen the previous edition. I didn't know the game existed until I saw that one sitting on the shelf at tabletop.
Yeah. It's thoroughly entertaining. You know, Sarah, what did you think of it?
I thought it was great. The only thing that I didn't like was the way of tracking events and how time was passing.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was a little bit awkward, how they used the ghost timer, the ghost piece.
It
was almost
it is one of those things. You don't actually go, like, around the table in turns. It's whoever's marker is closest to the 60-minute mark goes next. So, like, after you spend 12 minutes, whoever's closest to the 60 goes, et cetera. And you use and they give you a white marker that looks like all the others. It's just white.
To
sort of
marker to
indicate where you're at.
And there can be a silver player, so sometimes you get confused.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that it's kind of a clunky mechanic, but it's kind of hard to figure out another way to do it.
It's better than nothing. I can see why you did it.
It seems like they're like, well, this is the best we got so far for that.
Or just make it look different. I mean,
yeah.
Just have a different icon.
I mean, I suppose you could do it with dice, or you could try to do it by memory, but that can be, you know,
just
iffy,
bad.
Really.
Just as difficult, if not worse.
Yeah, but it's good. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed it myself, so I think, we've never played with any of the optional rules, which add a greater challenge. Like, you know, remove the respite cards from the event deck. Yeah, that sort of great stuff. crazed gnomes. Yeah, you could start getting paranoid gnomes and crazed gnomes. He can take the attack gnome action, so you can start attacking people with crowbars and stuff. So that's all good. I guess actually here, and in the optional rules, it gives you rules rules for two playing solitaire and playing two players. So I guess 1 to 8 does technically apply. So fun little games designed by Bruno Fiduti and Jeff Gontier. So it's one of those wacky European games. One of those wacky European games. Recommend it. Fun game. Recommend it. Fun game.
The rant. Okay, so I don't. Yeah. So
words are hard.
Words are hard.
Let's go shopping.
Let's start with. I'm nostalgic for my childhood. Sometimes.
Uh huh.
There are certain things that can trigger this more than others. Meeting Sarah made me go back and watch a whole bunch of Beast Wars and Transformers.
That's acceptable.
Coming into contact with some other friends made me want to go do some things. In the last week, a game that had been flying completely under my radar is making me go back and mess around with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Mm-hmm. There's a game coming out. It's out for Xbox and PC already. It'll be out for PlayStation Network on the 24th. It's called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows. And it is, from watching gameplay, everything you probably would have wanted out of a good Turtles game. For the most part. It looks hilarious. They got the humor right. They got the personalities of the Turtles. But being that Turtles is held by Nickelodeon now, you know, they determine certain things, you know, had to be related to the current TV show that's going on, and whatever. It's something that looks really like I want to get into it, but I'm cautious. That being aside, I'll have more on that game later. It made me think about a lot of the nostalgia that I've had and a lot of the things that are being put out these days based on other, not only my nostalgia, but other people's nostalgia. Look at the books of the D&D reprint books.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of that is fondness for these older systems. Not mm-hmm. wrongly, not rightly, just there is a certain sure. level of fondness. And, you know, it makes me think about other ways that these have been capitalized on. And it also makes me amazed that certain intellectual properties are still going strong or are being revamped. Do you remember a team, well, maybe you know, Andre might. Do you guys remember a show called Max Steel?
Yes.
Did you know they're doing a new version of it?
Interesting.
I saw the toys in Target the other day. Couldn't believe it. I'm like, wow. And I was looking at the toys. Completely different. Absolutely different. They're using that same concept. Mm-hmm. Their Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is now in its like fourth or fifth TV show.
They've got toys.
They've got everything else. And it's still completely different from the Eastman and Laird comic that started it all. Mm-hmm. And the one that kind of blew my mind, because this was totally my thing, one of my big things as a young kid, Power Rangers. On the 23rd of August, I think it was, hit its 20-year anniversary
mm-hmm.
of being on the air in America.
Mm-hmm.
And being what it was. And it blew my mind that it had been so long. And I realized how much, you know, that there are certain things that we were nostalgic for that are great fun to watch. The original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is absolutely hilarious to watch. The old Ghostbusters cartoon, absolutely hilarious to watch. You go back and watch the Ghostbusters movies or even play the 2008 Ghostbusters video game. That game was great. I love that game. But at the same time, I'm sitting there going, holy crud, some of this is terrible. And we love our nostalgia. There's nothing wrong with nostalgia. It's fun to giggle at. I mean, we had the 80s nostalgia birthday party for myself, Sarah, and Ethan's brother, Eric, and we were watching He-Man and Thundar the Barbarian, and we were peeing ourselves laughing at how ridiculous some of it all was. And this doesn't really have a point. This is just, like I said,
I don't think you guys can even make it through a Care Bears episode.
Oh, God, no.
No, we didn't.
I would rather just think of Care Bears like they weren't really, like, in my mind.
But, again, like I said, this doesn't really... I'll end this fairly soon because this is just kind of a rambling thing that I had tonight. But it occurs to me that nostalgia is a very, very powerful force. And you know, but the term gets thrown around kind of carelessly on the internet. Oh, this is nostalgic. Oh, this is, you know, it's a nostalgia-based game. It's you know, reminiscent of the 80s, reminiscent of the golden age of this. And that's, in a lot of ways, that's a lofty goal to hit.
Well, good stuff.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, let's face it. Right, you know, around the table, who played Mario Brothers 3? Okay.
You never played Mario Brothers 3?
My favorite was too cheap to buy an SNES.
Yeah. Well, that was on
you
old Nintendo.
You should go play Mario Brothers 3 now.
Mario 3 was on Nintendo original.
The first gaming system I had was a 3DO.
Very nice. And they were cheap, huh?
Bought it from a friend.
That would be why.
Probably $20.
But Mario Brothers 3, I went back and these days, based on what I like to play now.
You guys have always been more PC gamers, really.
It's kind of hard to play. It's very different from... I mean, I remember sitting and playing the game for hours on end, over and over again, and I'm sitting there going, I can't even get through this. And But that's why nostalgia can be a tricky thing. It's like, oh, I remember this being great, and you just get there, and it's just like...
They seem to have built this up a bit.
So, with that being said, are you going to get Darkwing Duck? Or not Darkwing Duck, Scrooge the new...
I don't know. And let me... Okay, let me push this on another tangent here. just for a few seconds, this is why I was kind of happy Nathan wasn't going to be here, because this would take a lot longer.
he's not going to listen to it anyway.
I know,
so
that's why
I want to give you this little...
We're on 130 episodes, he hasn't listened to a single one.
Okay. I want to play it, I want to try a demo of it. It cracks me up because a bunch of people have reviewed the DuckTales remastered game.
Yeah, so?
So is it the old Nintendo one?
It's the old Nintendo one.
Okay. It wasn't a bad game.
It was a very fun game. And I was
partially fond of Mickey Mouse Campaign myself. But
yeah. Well, they're actually making a brand new Castle of Illusion game.
I borrowed it from a neighbor and beat it and then took it back.
Which one?
The Scourge of the Dark One. I love that game.
Okay. I love that game as a kid, and I want to play the new one. But here's the funny thing. I was reading a review from a reviewer, and I don't remember which website, and they're like, the controls are horrible, the combat's clunky, the jumping's clunky, and I'm sitting there going, yeah, it's just like the old NES game.
I mean, it probably is.
But they're knocking it down marks
for like not having like long storyline.
It doesn't have a storyline.
I'd be interested to know how old this reviewer
was.
Controllers used to be square, right?
That's the other thing, they're rectangular.
They were playing it on the Xbox, which notoriously has a bad directional pad. And they were using the joystick on the Xbox gamepad. I'm like, how can you play a game that was only designed to have four different movement directions?
You went,
with a directional pad and an A and B button.
Yeah.
Right. There were four.
Not only did you get one button, you got two. That was sticky.
Technically, there were four. There was start and select too.
Yeah,
I also played Atari. You had a joystick and a button.
And oh, that's right.
That's right.
But it's nostalgia rules. Retro rules. Nostalgia rules. How many of those like Atari controller things with the two plugs that go into the audio video ports on a TV have you seen over the years? Just that it's the Atari 1, the Atari 2, Intellivision 1, Intellivision 2. And it's a fortune. People make a fortune on these things. And I'm not saying that's bad. God bless. It got me interested in what triggered my nostalgia. And I will say that it's a $14 game. I'm probably going to buy the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game because it just looks like too much fun. And Sarah can second me on this. The two of us have been staring at this game.
Yeah, I kind of want to break Dance with Mikey all over the place.
At least your nostalgia looks reasonable. I bought Colonial Marines at full price.
Oh, God. I'm sorry.
I can't even play those games.
I heard that was terrible. But that's the thing, is that that's why nostalgia can be wonderful, but it also can be very dangerous. And,
God damn it, Colonial Marines.
But yeah, that's about it. I mean, I know this was kind of a pointless rant, but yeah, that's my rant on nostalgia and what I've been into in the last week and a half, so.
The review.
All right, so one of the things I'm going to be doing is a review. And when I say review, I mean first glance, because we couldn't make it past the second or third module. One of the things I've always done is Pathfinder. I love Pathfinder. I do Pathfinder with almost every group, and except for my Thursday group, because they lost that privilege for obvious reasons. So one of the things I want to do was start reviewing some of the adventure paths. Because I have a lot of these. I like looking at them. I like playing them. I think they're interesting. This was actually run by one of my friends, Ryan. He's a new GM, but he wanted to try it out. So a bit of this is going to come from him as a GM, but having looked at the modules, there's only so much you can do with those. So I'm going to have pros, cons, and then things that I call a wash, which are neither good nor bad, or you've got goods and bads, and so it effectively washes itself out. I'm going to go ahead and start out with the pros for Skull and Shackles. Skull and Shackles is their pirate-themed adventure path, where you start out from the lowly scrubs working your way up, gaining dread pirate names, getting all these sort of entertaining things, really probably building off of the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise, Galarian style.
Mm-hmm.
So let me start with pros. A, you're pirates. Let's just put it out there. You're pirates in a D&D setting. You finally now legitimately have a reason to loot, plunder, maraud, and destroy everything.
And go arr!
And go arr! Except now you're a dwarf, right? I'm me and me adamantium hook are going up your bum.
Whoa. Oh my.
So, in addition, it's
Turducken, safe word.
Since they issued the Ultimate Combat where they introduced firearms, you finally can do pirates with gunpowder, and it makes a lot more sense than having to fight with catapults, which is what you had to do in 3.5, which was hysterical. You just had to have catapults like shooting you. No.
Miss. Ram them with the
ship. You really capture the theme, you really capture the ideas of what it would be like to be a pirate that you really want to play. In that, it did fairly well. Second, you hate the villains. God, I hate those villains. They made sure that you had personal, ambitious reasons why you wanted to take the person down and beat them with a stick until they stopped twitching. Then dismember them and light them on fire so that nobody could resurrect them. They have such wonderful... the first captain and... Plug, I think it was his name. You hated Plug. He was the taskmaster who whipped you every day if you did not roll fast enough, if you did not roll high enough on your skill checks in order to work on the boat. You were tying the rigging. Oh, I'm sorry, you failed by one. He whips you for D3 plus 4 hit points every day. You're just kind of like, oh, what the? You son of a... In addition, they sit there and drug you so that you effectively suck on the ship. They really did that well. You hate those people. And finally, for the last pro, and sadly there are only three pros, the ships can be deadly. The most deadly part of that series was falling to death on the ship. Not the encounters, not the villains... Falling on the ships. That killed more characters than anything else.
Wow.
All right. Now, here's the cons, and unfortunately, this is going to kind of put this in a negative light because I can't really give Skull and Shackles the glowing review that I usually do with some of the Pathfinder stuff. Let me break this down to modules 1 and 2 because we didn't make it to module 3 before we said this is dumb and we'll quit. First and foremost, the first thing that I have to hit on is a terrible, terrible, terrible intro in how to be pirates. You're supposed to want to be pirates. You're supposed to want to get into pirating, looting, and plundering. So what do? They kidnap you. Kidnap you and enslave you. Because when you want to do something, kidnapping and enslavement is the first thing that I view as a motivator. I'm going to be kidnapped and enslaved and be a pirate? Neat.
It worked for the Dread Pirate Roberts.
It worked for Dread Pirate Roberts, but that's the only person.
And there's only
that works when a writer is writing.
So they have to kill
us. Oh, no, I know. We were a party of six. We're like, okay, well, the GM tells us, okay, you guys are going to start out, you know, wanting to be pirates. All right, cool. I've got this guy who wants to be a pirate. They knock me unconscious, drag me on board a ship.
Like, dude, you could have just asked.
Start. You actually get recruited by chaotic evil pirates, kidnapped by press gang into service, force-fed drugs so that you become their drug slaves while you're slowly dying. And I want to be a pirate?
This is the life of luxury.
I kind of went, this is my first motivation is to get off this boat and go back to whatever I wasn't doing before, as I was a first level character. So really, you have to, if you want to make this game work, you have to alter that intro. Unless, of course, you like the idea of being kidnapped, drugged, and, you know, press gang into service.
Oh my.
The second part of the first module that really got me was it drags. Now, in a lot of games where you have that, okay, you guys have some downtime, roll some dice, figure out what happens, except it does this for 90 days. All right, congratulations, you're working on the rigging. Roll your rigging check. Roll your climb check. Roll this. For 90 some odd days. With small little adventures sparsed in. Now, mind you, you sit there and go, oh, it's 3 skill checks. That shouldn't be too bad. Except that there's this one point where there's 15 days in between you and an encounter. So take the number of people you have around the table, multiply that by 15, including consequences, time, and how you're doing it, because there are different modes on how to do it. If you want to shirk work, if you want to do your work well, if you want to socialize, if you want to go drink afterwards, if you want to... It really dragged. I kind of went...
It sounds like
that's built into the module.
That is built into the module.
I'm sure you are supposed to make 15 of these rolls.
Yes.
It sounds like it'd be better in a video game or an optional rule.
Yeah, if you just do that. So you'll have to modify that if you want to make that work. And finally, the third thing that gets me, I've often had problems with video games and role-playing games trying to make the transitions to each other. Now, it's a great idea. I love it when you take something that works well and implement it into the other. Unfortunately, it took something that I hated from MMOs, put it into an RPG, which is rep grinding.
Oh.
In order to secure the mutiny on the ship, which, let me tell you, that's the first thing we were planning was mutiny.
Mm-hmm.
You have to rep grind NPCs over 90 days on top of your already working on the riggings, avoiding getting drug addictions, all this sort of thing. You have to rep grind at least 13 NPCs. That also is a major drag. Now, mind you, they had colorful NPCs. I really like their NPCs. But it was a rep grind. A rep grind on top of an already dragging game where the intro really didn't make me want to be a pirate. All right, that's module one. Module two...
Module one is the Wormwood Mutiny.
Yes. Trust me, we were planning mutiny to start this thing out. The second one...
Raiders of the Fever Sea.
This is one of the ones where, once again, my MMO dislike is going to come out. Because you have to grind reputation in order to get notorious enough that you can participate in the plot. That's right, you have to go on miscellaneous side quests. Now, mind you, I always go on side quests anyway. But now I'm being forced to do it. Go on side quests so that you can earn enough points so that you can earn a title so that you can earn more points so that you can then participate in one of the major races so that you can actually get this plot started. I have to grind. I have to come to game to grind adventures until I am notorious enough. Now, I understand leveling up is a little bit of a grind, especially in a dungeon. But at least it's entertaining. I had to grind random merchant vessels until we finally got notorious enough.
Wow.
Which is BS.
So far, the first two modules could be a cutscene.
Yes.
You couldn't even get, like, rep with XP?
No.
So it's like, I give you XP plus so much rep.
Yes.
Now,
I could see doing a, like, back to the first one, I could see doing a mutiny and having, you know, established all those, the NPCs. You go, okay, you guys need to talk to 13 of these, or talk to,
uh-huh,
how about a more reasonable number, like 5?
Talk to the leaders of the group.
Yeah.
And then it's like, and let's role play that out. Let's get that, you know, some fun interaction.
They have the dice mechanics go with it.
That is lame.
Well, multiple ones, yeah. That's.
But now the second one, random merchant vessels.
There were some decent adventures tossed in there too. I think one. The rest of them really were like grinding. Now, mind you, they were all pirate themed, but it was grinding merchant ships, grinding random desert isles. Grinding, attacking another boat and adding it to your fleet. I never thought that could be less... I never thought that increasing your armada could be grindy, but it did.
I can see what you're trying to do. Enjoyed as a video game. I can see what they're trying to do, but they just...
Execution was poor. Finally, the last thing I'm going to hit on is the encounters. As I was talking about earlier in the episode where the team worked too well for the GM to do anything, the encounters are so nerf-batted. And by nerf-bat, I mean weak. They were really weak. He started scrunching together two or three encounters that were higher level than us that they had planned in the module and throwing them at us at once, and they still didn't hurt us. Now, mind you, we're like level 4 characters, and they're like, the group is attacked by 3 Sothwagen. 3 CR1s against a group of 4 CR4s.
That doesn't even add up to their math.
I'm like, technically it's like a CR3. They would die before they could do anything. And they kept doing this over and over to the point where we're like, no, it's... Come on!
You wouldn't even get any enough experience points to make it.
But you also have to grind your reputation on top of that.
That's the noise my fire would make. Oh.
No, they had... Skull and Shackles has great ideas with terrible execution. Now let me go ahead and say what's a wash. That way I'm not taking too long, although I'm probably already rambling a little. Sea combat. That's a wash. It feels too much like normal combat. Your boat has an attack roll, it has an AC, it has hit points. It's a fighter on lane. It's a fighter on the scene. Yeah. The NPCs, you had some really cool, colorful NPCs, like the halfling who swears constantly no matter what she's doing. She was so funny. I loved her. But then you also had NPCs like, I am the obligatory villain. I mean... I'm a druid who races boats. Okay, neat. Who you don't get to interact with until module 4. Oh.
No, we want to go over there. I don't have any information for that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have run into problems with that with episodic adventures that they release sporadically.
And then finally, the last thing I'm going to hit on is their setting. Now, mind you, Galarian's a nice, fine setting. I don't mind it too much, although I still always use my own setting because I put a lot more work into that. The wash with this one is you get a nice taste of Galarian, but you're out on boats. You're literally on a boat. For the vast bulk of the game, you don't see the setting. You're in the water attacking a merchant vessel, which is from one of their areas. One of the pirates or Teliax or whatever. So you don't get a your pirates without a setting.
Mm.
And now, mind you, they might fix this in modules 3, 4, 5, and 6, but we were so god-awful bored that we didn't finish it. We got to 2 and said, I'm done grinding. If I want to grind, I'm going to go upstairs and play World of Warcraft. Mm. So, Skull and Shackles is a decent game if the GM can put some work into it and iron out the mechanics that are so sorely hampering the game. That's my review of Skull and Shackles.
And the guns are in a different one?
Yes.
How are the ships?
They give you the very, very basic rules for ships.
Are there more ships in a different book?
No.
Sad. I like ships.
Both. It had a lot of potential.
You just want to play Birthright all the time.
I pretty much would play Birthright at any point.
They actually have a good adventure path called Kingmaker. Yes.
I've heard Kingmaker is good.
That was one of the games where the GM gave up because we were winning too much. His Cyclops Lich got raffle stomped into the dirt. He couldn't take it because he'd sit there. He's like, "Aha! I'm an evil Lich," and I was playing a trip character. So trip. The mage is now prone on the ground.
Kingmaker. And what's the other one that? It was another one that you got that was really good.
I liked Rise of the Rune Lords.
Yeah.
That's their first
one. Yeah, that was the first one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's very classic high adventure. Evil mage racing an army of giants.
Okay.
In a world where it's only available for download on GamersHavenPodcast.com.
As the fog rolls into the dirty, filth-filled backstreets of merry old London, a scream rings out in the night, echoing against the harsh brick walls. Another horror of the night has nearly claimed a victim, feeding upon the weak and defenseless. But before the meal is to be had, a shot rings out, a report against those who would prey upon the downtrodden. The Rippers have arrived to take back the night, and the night will not go down without a fight. A game centered around the action-packed Savage World setting, Rippers. Join Rippers and show the beasts of the night that humanity will not disappear into the darkness without a fight.
Random Encounters.
Close it out. All right, welcome back. We are closing this one out. It's a good meaty episode today. As always, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, subscribe to various feeds that we have, etc., etc. And if you feel magnanimous, go to our website and click on one or two of the
I went up to the ad banners to give us a little bit of scratch to help pay for all this stuff. So,
in addition, I will be starting up a blog spot for GMs on the Gamers Haven podcast sometime soon, and check that out.
Yep. Don't know what the link is quite yet,
yeah,
but
we're working on that.
It'll be something at gamershavenpodcast.com. So, evilteacher.gamershavenpodcast.com or something.
Sure, why not?
No problem. I can set it up. It's all good.
Yes.
It's all good. So, and our resident resident artist at the table here, Sarah, is busy working on some new art for the website and various other things. So,
and if you want to check her stuff out, you can check it out at howwestaysaneatwork.thecomicseries.com.
Mm-hmm. Or you can just do .com, because I went ahead and bought the site.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
Cool.
Makes it easier.
howwestaysaneatwork.com.
Excellent, excellent. And I know you sent me some ad banners, and I'll get those up on the site eventually. But beyond all that, we will see you again in a few weeks when we'll be talking about stuff with other stuff, with more stuff.
I like stuff.
Stuff is cool.
I love stuffing. I can't wait till Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm. Stuffing. We'll talk about stuffing. Mm-hmm.
Sounds good. Bye, guys.
Bye.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.